It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
It's peanut butter Vader time. Everybody, this is the Memorial Day weekend edition of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, the award-winning Solid Monster Sounds Off, episode 384, here for Sunday, May 24th, 2015. I am the Solid Monster. That's right, 2015 Wrestling Radio Award Show of the Year, and Host of the Year, too. Thanks to everybody listening right now on Stitcher Radio, or if you are listening in iTunes, hope you're having a fantastic week. Or if you're streaming this right now in our free Sound Off app in the Google Play Store, those of you with Android devices, hope you're doing well. It was 4 years this past week that Macho Man Randy Savage passed away. I posted a tweet about how awesome he was. And at last count, that message had been retweeted 1,467 times. So the power of the madness lives on. It was also 16 years ago this week that Owen Hart died. Still one of the greatest tragedies in wrestling history. I think second only really to what happened in 2007. It was just so senseless, it didn't have to happen. And I will never forget when Jim Ross made the announcement on TV. What I was feeling, where I was, who I was with. It's just one of those moments you don't ever forget. Credit to Brian Blade and Noah Mark for bringing this to my attention. There is a new book out this Tuesday. It is not wrestling related, but this Tuesday, May 26th, is a new book out called Losing the Signal, the untold story behind the extraordinary rise and spectacular fall of BlackBerry. It's pretty much about the rise and fall of BlackBerry, including the role that the iPhone played in that downfall when iPhone first came out in 2007. As somebody who once owned a BlackBerry device, I can vouch for how the iPhone eventually lured me away. And really, it's been a steady, fairly dramatic fall for BlackBerry ever since then. It's not Apple's fault. It's you know, pretty much BlackBerry's inability to innovate that has led them to this point, in my opinion. BlackBerry, you know, this was an interesting stat that I read. BlackBerry once controlled half of the smartphone market. You know what their market share is today? Less than 1%. That is incredible. So this sounds like a good one. It's available for pre-order right now. The reason I bring all this up, of course, to tie it into the Sound Off, it hits the Audible store on Tuesday. And I would have to think that if you are one of the people who sign up for a 30-day trial of the Audible service using our URL, that come Tuesday, you should be able to get this book for free, even though it's a brand new book. I could be wrong about that, but my understanding is that once you sign up for that trial, even if the book is brand new, you get to pick one free audiobook, and this should be one that you guys get to pick. You can cash in your one free audiobook on Losing the Signal instead of paying $25 for it, which I think is the price that it's going for. So you can get it for free using our link, audibletrial.com/solomonster. You can cancel your trial at any point in the next 30 days after you sign up. You will not be billed, and plus, you get to keep your free book. It's yours. It belongs to you. So why not grab the new book? It sounds like a keeper. Or grab another book. It's entirely up to you. audibletrial.com/solomonster. Use that URL. Sign up. Cash in for your free book. It helps the podcast out, and you get something for free. Also, ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff is our official store. The only official Sound Off store that's out there. Anything else is a cheap knockoff. That's on ProWrestlingTees.com. We have, at present, we have 19 different shirts up. I can tell you there is a new shirt going up, hopefully at some point in the next few days. Definitely this week at some point, probably by the time many of you listen to this. So you might want to keep going back and checking out the store. Every shirt in there up to size 5XL. So no matter how big or small you may be, there is a shirt for you. It ships all over the world, international. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. And like I said, we'll have a new shirt going up in the next few days. If you would like to make a PayPal donation, that is the quickest, easiest, most direct way to show your support for the Sound Off, besides listening, of course, every week. You can do so on thesolemonster.com. There is a PayPal box that is parked right there. It pays rent every month. It's not going anywhere. It's right there on the right-hand side of the page. You can make a $10 donation and get yourself a shout-out and a wrestling nickname that I give to you. I like a booker, like a promoter. I bestow this name upon you for you to use in whatever promotion you may compete in. For $30 or more, you get the same nickname and shout-out. Plus, you get a quick plug for your own podcast or business, YouTube channel, what have you. Just make sure when you make that $30 donation, you include the information either at that time that you make the donation or send me a separate email, but make sure in the subject line I know that this has to do with your donation so I don't not get to it in time. So I want to give a big shout out to a bunch of people this week who made donations to the show. You guys are awesome. Tremaine Flowers, thank you very much. Patrick Wegner, the Florida Freebird, Bryant Becerra, the Australian Ass Kicker, Anthony Patty. He went above and beyond this week, so thank you for that. Nefarious Nigel Gill, Nash the Gravedigger Degalado, Intense Isaac Soaladob, Guilty as Charged Mark Court, Doomsday Donde Page, Zach House of Pain Hulker, Hytham the Equalizer Al Nawasser, the Bogota Big Shot Fernando Leon, the Bronx Bomber Robert Hordines, Renard Hawkeye Hussey, Bell to Bell Hugh Stockwell, Jerry Flatjack Flores, Russell Zigzag Zavala, James Fully Loaded Finn Hersey, Christopher Misdemeanor Mastropaolo. You can check out youtube.com/nextweekwrestling for his YouTube channel. Kingpin Jason Kaiser, who wants everybody to know that you can check out EOR Podcast with Kingpin and EFA, talking stupid religion, politics, heavy metal, and pro wrestling. You can check them out on Spreaker.com/EOR Podcast and Facebook.com/EOR Podcast. Check them out. I also have to give a quick plug for NGW, New Generation Wrestling. They are having a show called Road to Glory. Their Road to Glory show at the Ludus Wrestling Center in Brooklyn, New York, 133 29th Street. Tickets are only $12. Doors open at 6:30. And bell time is 8 p.m. That's coming up on Saturday, June the 13th. It might actually help if I gave the date of the show, right? Saturday, June 13th is the date of the show. So definitely check them out. You know, I've been to a fair number of independent shows. I know not everybody has attended one before. But if you've never been to an independent show, no matter how big or small it may be, chances are you're going to have a lot of fun. If you are a wrestling fan and there is wrestling near where you live, I always tell people, go. Buy a ticket and go. I would never tell somebody not to do it because chances are you're going to have a shit ton of fun. And I'm sure that show will be no different. Payback was last weekend. I did a Sound Off Extra review, a full review, half hour long of the show with my thoughts. It's up on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/thesolemonster. So check it out. Hit the subscribe button while you're there. So I'm not going to go through the whole show. I will just say I thought it was a very good show overall. The best thing on the show to me was the tag team title match. That was an excellent match. I enjoyed it a great deal. And the main event as well. The main event, it took a little while to get going, but I think as it approached the last 5 or 6 minutes, that's when it really took off and it turned into an excellent main event. Aside from the weak-looking pedigree finish, if that's the move that Rollins is going to use from now on, he's got to work on that a little bit. Although, you know, to be fair here, it also is the opponent taking the move, but I haven't seen a really good pedigree probably in I don't know, freaking 10 years. Triple H has been doing it like shit for so many years now, so hopefully Rollins, if that's going to be his move going forward, hopefully he can improve on it and not actually make it worse. But I thought it was a very good show overall. If you want my full thoughts, again, head over to the YouTube channel and check it out, because we have got a lot of stuff to cover this week. We're going to kick things off with NXT. NXT had a big show this week, and there was kind of something important that happened at the end of it. And then we'll get into some Raw thoughts, of course, and then TNA. And I have got a lot to get off my chest when it comes to TNA and a lot of the shit that's gone down this week. So you're definitely going to want to stick around for that. I promise you, it will be entertaining. But we start with NXT. Samoa Joe made his NXT debut this past week. After a lot of talk and speculation and rumors abounding of where he would end up and is he going to go there and when, he posted a picture on social media a few days before, looking in pretty freaking fantastic shape for Samoa Joe. And it made you wonder, huh, he looks extra motivated. I wonder why. Well, wonder no more. He is now in NXT. He debuted at the end of TakeOver and got to keep his name, which supposedly was a Triple H call, something Triple H probably fought for. So for now, anyway, he is, in fact, Samoa Joe. And here's the deal with Joe. From what I have read, from the different reports that I have seen, he will continue to work independent dates for the people who are wondering about that, because he's still announcing dates into August. He's still taking indie bookings through the month of August and possibly beyond. So as part of this deal that he's made with Triple H, he will continue to work indies. Now, I would think that if WWE needed him for something and maybe he already had a booking on that day, he could probably, you know, WWE could probably go to him and say, listen, we need you on this date, and maybe they would get top priority. But they are letting him work indie dates. Again, he's keeping his name. He has agreed to some sort of deal that allows his merchandise to be sold through WWE Shop. They already have a Samoa Joe shirt up, and that shirt is now sold out. It is on back order until the middle of June, so I'd say they did pretty good with that shirt right out of the gate. I mean, minutes within him walking out there on stage at Full Sail, they already had a new shirt up for him in the store. It didn't take more than a few minutes to get that shirt up, so they timed it just perfectly, and those shirts just went right out the window. Now, people are asking me, does this mean that Joe's not going to go to the main roster? No. As of right now, I don't think there are any plans for him to go to the main roster. I would think if he was going to possibly make it onto Raw and SmackDown on a regular basis, he probably would have to change his name. I would think that's still something that is possible down the road. I think it would be incredibly stupid. I mean, you already debuted the guy. You got a shirt for him. It says Samoa Joe. Even if things go great in the next 6 months with him in NXT and eventually they actually want to bring him to the main roster, it would be brain dead stupid to change his name at that point. He's, you know, a big enough name to a lot of people where I think it would have been dumb anyway. But once you debut the guy and you start marketing merchandise for him, you got to change the name. I mean, when Kenta debuted, they promoted him as Kenta. William Regal came out on that NXT TakeOver special and introduced him as Kenta. But on that first night, he came out, he cut a promo, and he said, listen, I'm getting a new start, a fresh start, and so here's my new name from now on. You know, it's not like he went on for weeks and weeks going by the name Kenta. So I would think whatever ends up happening, he will be Samoa Joe. But we'll see. There's no plans for him to make the main roster. He's got a very special, unique kind of deal. I would think if things go well, they can negotiate a new one or renegotiate the contract that he has now. He could potentially at some point end up on the main roster, but I just don't see that happening anytime soon. He's got what some people have called a Rhino-like deal. Rhino comes in and he does some shots for NXT. And I think Rhino's role largely, as we saw with Baron Corbin, is to put over these younger guys that WWE has big plans for. I mean, Rhino comes out, he wins a bunch of squash matches, but when push comes to shove, he went against Sami Zayn, he went against Baron Corbin. Rhino didn't win those matches. His role is very clear. And Rhino works independent dates all the time. He works Tommy Dreamer's House of Hardcore shows, so I think Joe's deal is very similar in that respect. But whereas Rhino is there to explicitly put new guys over, I think with Joe there's real value in using him the way they would any other main event talent. Don't just use Joe to put over the next crop of NXT stars. Joe can be the next, or one of the next big stars, I think, in WWE. I really do. And the guy's not getting any younger. The guy's what? Is he 36 now? He's getting up there. I think if you're going to do something with him, then now, you know, like either immediately, 6 months from now. I mean, this is when you kind of need to formulate your battle plan and say, okay, how are we going to use this guy? How are we going to take full advantage of whatever name recognition he brings along with him? And also, he's, you know, a pretty good performer. And I know that Joey Numbers is probably deleting this podcast from his feed right now as we speak. But I do think there is value in Joe, even though he is older, and maybe he isn't the Samoa Joe from the ROH days. I don't know, just his presence, his promos, you know, he's someone who I think, like a Kevin Owens, can really make the money, right? And at the end of the day, that's the whole point. You want to make money, and I think Joe can make the money. So I hope it leads to a bigger deal down the road, but right now it's this very special NXT deal that they have with him at the moment. So we'll get to what happened with Joe in a second here. We may as well just take you through the whole NXT Unstoppable show from Wednesday night. The streak of really good takeover shows continues. This was not the best of the bunch. Maybe not even top three, I didn't think. But it had an okay undercard, a phenomenal women's match, and a hot angle to end the show, even though we never did have a formal ending to that main event, which was mildly annoying. We had a number one contenders match, Finn Balor, Tyler Breeze, and Hideo Itami. They shot an angle earlier that day in the parking lot where somebody attacked Hideo Itami. He was on the ground, clutching his shoulder, writhing in pain. Kevin Owens walks by. This was awesome. So they shoot this angle, right, where I guess like a fan supposedly is recording Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy in the parking lot, I guess, as they arrived. So we hear screaming in the background, and the fan goes racing with the camera, and that's when we see Hideo surrounded by some people, and he's on the ground, and he's holding his shoulder. And they're calling for help. Poor Hideo's just laying there on the ground. And Kevin Owens, who I guess just arrived at that exact moment at the Performance Center, has his gym bag slung over his shoulder, comes walking by, just very casually looks down at Hideo Itami on the ground and just keeps walking, and he says, "Ah, oh, that's a shame." A little Seinfeld moment there from Kevin Owens, because he doesn't give a fuck. So Hideo Itami was out of the match again. He's going to be having shoulder surgery. He's going to be out for a long time. It sucks. The timing for him sucks. I think he had a lot of momentum coming off that WrestleMania special. You know, he was in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania. I think he was probably going to win this match and be the next challenger for Kevin Owens. And now that's not going to happen. So it became a singles match, Finn Balor and Tyler Breeze. The entrances were the highlight of this match. Tyler Breeze, they did like a runway model entrance where all these women who were kind of dressed up like Tyler came out holding cell phones, taking selfies. Then he walked out, walked up to each woman, looked in their phone, took a selfie with each one of them. It was cool. I really enjoyed that. Finn Balor came out dressed up as the Demon, put a little bit of a new spin on his look. He had bat wings, so I guess, you know, think Undertaker at Survivor Series 96. That was not a good look for the Undertaker. Thankfully, that was only one time that he came out with those bat wings, and we never saw them again. But for Finn Balor, I think here it worked. He had spikes on his back. I'm not sure if he was supposed to be, again, just a demon or a dinosaur or what they were going for there, but it looked cool. He also had these gashes that were airbrushed on his legs, kind of like the Wolves in TNA. We've seen them with that kind of body paint before. The body paint on his back looked sick. He had this airbrushed art made to look like this creature, this demon, was breaking through his back. All you could see was this giant eye. What's great about this was it wasn't just done to look cool. Now, remember when Devitt got the Balor name after he signed with NXT, and I spent some time here on this podcast explaining the origins of the name? I did a lot of research, a lot of reading. I didn't know where does this Finn Balor name even come from? So, you know, we did a little history lesson here on the show and talked about how the name referenced the god in Irish mythology. And if you remember, I said that he had a third eye. Right, the Balor god had a third eye right in the middle of his forehead that when that eye opened, it just destroyed everything in sight. You did not want that eye to open. That's the significance of the eye on Balor's back on Wednesday night. I thought that was actually some cool continuity there. Would have been nice for the announcers to maybe reference it, but I guess that would be above their pay grade. The match itself was okay. I've seen both of them have better matches. I mean, some people were saying, oh, this was a great match, an excellent match. It was good. It was a good match. The highlight, I guess, would have been the stage dive by Balor. He climbed up. The staging was a little bit different here on this show. They kind of created a bit of a new stage. He climbed up on the up on it, really, but he wasn't that high up. He was only, I would say, Tyler Breeze standing up, if he's 6 feet tall, and I'm not sure if he is, but let's say he's 6 feet tall. I mean, Balor was probably only another 2 or 3 feet above him in the air. It was very safe, but it looked cool. And after that, he threw Tyler into the ring, hit the corner drop kick and the double foot stomp for the pin, and Finn Balor is your new number one contender for the NXT Championship. Like I said, good match. I wouldn't say it was anything overly special. The entrances and I guess the dive by Balor were the real highlights. Yeah, they really weren't going to give them the time they needed to steal the show. I think if you take Ty Dillinger, yeah, Ty Dillinger hasn't been on TV in weeks, but if you take Tyler Breeze and you take Finn Balor and you give them, you know, 15 minutes in like a main event or a co-main event match, those guys are going to go out there, they're going to tear it up. We've seen Tyler Breeze do it before. We know Devitt can do it. But this was the opening match. They didn't give them a whole lot of time. So, you know, I didn't expect them to end up stealing the show because they didn't really have the time to do so. Now, poor Tyler Breeze, you know, always a bridesmaid, never a bride, this poor bastard. I just don't know what you do with him now. You know, they've kept him protected. I'm very surprised that, especially with that character that he has, it would be very easy to just make a joke out of that character. Oh, he goes on a losing streak, or he's just a prelim kind of guy. They've kept him protected. He's been in some big matches. He's won some big matches. I think he's got a victory over Sami Zayn. He has at least one victory in all the matches they've had over Hideo Itami. I remember being very surprised when Tyler Breeze beat him clean that one time. So they've done a good job, I think, of protecting him. I just don't see on NXT where he goes from here with the talent that they have on top. Even though Sammy's out hurt and Itami is out hurt, you would think, oh, this creates a hole at the top of the card. I think they filled that hole probably with Joe. Uha Nation is about to make his debut. They clearly have big plans for him. And you've still got Kevin Owens and Finn Balor. I mean, Neville is gone, but it just doesn't seem like there's a spot up on top right now for him, especially after losing this match clean in the middle. And definitely, I don't think he should be turned. I don't think turning him babyface is the answer either. Here's an idea that I pitched on Twitter, though. You know, R-Truth is in the Elimination Chamber match next weekend for the Intercontinental Championship. R-Truth should not be in the Elimination Chamber match. You know, I tolerated him being in the ladder match of WrestleMania. Maybe they were throwing the guy a bone. He's closer to the end of his career than he is the beginning of it. I don't know why he was in there anyway. He's very entertaining, don't get me wrong. You know, when he's on commentary doing his shtick, he can be very funny, but there's no reason for him to be in this Elimination Chamber match. None, at all. The dude is a joke. He is booked like a joke on television. Total comedy character. They've got him on TV running away from spiders. You know, I mean, what happened to making the Intercontinental title relevant again? I thought that was the goal. I know Daniel Bryan got hurt, so they didn't expect that to happen, but I don't know. I would like to think that is still the plan to make this championship meaningful. I mean, whether the goal is still to have the champion face off with Cena at SummerSlam, champion versus champion. I mean, I think that was probably the goal with Cena and Bryan. Now Bryan is gone. I don't know if that's still the plan or not. You would have to come up with somebody who I think is kind of almost on Bryan's level, main event or kind of upper mid-card main event tier. But you know what? Even if that's not the case, that's fine. That doesn't mean you can't use the Intercontinental title to elevate somebody new. So like I said, R-Truth is closer to the end of his career than the beginning of it. Tyler Breeze, on the other hand, has his whole career ahead of him. How do you debut him? That's the question. Well, why not have him jump R-Truth on his way to the ring? R-Truth is on his way down, going to the chamber. Tyler Breeze attacks him from behind. Maybe he whacks him in the back of the head with his cell phone. And he takes his spot in the pod. I mean, we've seen that happen once or twice before, right? Edge did that once, I think. But it's not. I don't think we've seen something like that happen in a long time. So why not have Breeze take his spot in the chamber? And better yet, why not have him win the entire thing? I look at the list of guys who's in there. I figure Sheamus is probably the one who's winning. He doesn't have to win, though. Wade Barrett should be kept far away from the Intercontinental title. It's not like he did that championship any good the way they booked him with it. Yeah, I look at a lot of the guys in that match, and I'm very, like, meh. You know, Ryback, eh. I wouldn't mind Ryback, I guess, getting a run with the Intercontinental title, but there's nobody in that match that stands out to me as, oh, this guy's got to win. This guy should be the next Intercontinental champion. You know, Tyler Breeze can take Truth's spot. He can win the Intercontinental title. He's done all he can do on NXT. It's time to move him up. I mean, I see definite similarities between Tyler Breeze and a young Shawn Michaels when he first turned heel and started doing the HBK gimmick. I mean, not just in terms of the character. I mean, in terms of the moveset, in terms of his mannerisms. I watch this guy, and I automatically think of Shawn Michaels from 1992 and 1993. That's what I think of. I mean, maybe Sean was a little more charismatic. I mean, I think Tyler's a charismatic guy. He's got that character down pat. And if you are of the belief that that Tyler Breeze character is not main event material, is not world championship material, you can't tell me that it's not Intercontinental Championship material. I think he and that title would fit together perfectly like a glove. So I say get R-Truth the hell out of there and do the right thing and put Tyler Breeze in the chamber. We had Bayley and Charlotte against Dana Brooke and Emma. Basic tag team Matt Charlotte pinned Emma with natural selection for the win. I really thought they would give the win to Dana Brooke here since they're so high on her. And yeah, you know, they could have used that, I guess, to further this budding rivalry that they have here between her and Charlotte. But I'm not complaining. If you asked me who I wanted to win, I probably would have gone with Charlotte and Bayley. I'm not a huge fan of Dana Brooke. I mean, she may win me over eventually. I like Emma. You know, poor Emma took the fall here. It was the only match on the card I predicted wrong, because I figured Dana and Emma were going to win. Corey Graves made a really stupid comment at one point during the match about Emma and misdemeanors that it came out of left field. I didn't even hear the whole thing. I just heard part of it, and when I heard the misdemeanor part, I'm like, wait, what? Just, I don't know, came out of nowhere. I thought it was completely unnecessary. I get him trying to pretend to be a heel, but I just thought that was stupid. I think that girl was embarrassed enough by what happened, and we don't need Corey Graves playing bad guy on TV saying stupid shit. And that's not the only stupid thing that he said all night, but that was one of the dumber things he said. They show the new recruits for the Performance Center sitting ringside. Casey Cassidy was among them. She was the Lance Storm student I mentioned last week who got beat on the last NXT by Sasha Banks. Black shorts, as the crowd called her. And when they showed UHA Nation, big cheers, as you might imagine. Lots of UHA chants. Still no name. He is still the man with no name. Baron Corbin and Rhino. Better than the match I saw them have at the San Jose State Show in March. Definitely better than that. Rhino went for the gore. Corbin clotheslined the shit out of him. And then finished him off with the End of Days for the pin. I thought it was fine. You know, Baron looked a little unsteady at the beginning. I mean, there was one botch, I guess, where he was supposed to be knocked over the top rope. Didn't quite make it over. He did the second time, but it wasn't a big deal. I thought this was fine. You know, just two big guys beating the shit out of each other, and Corbin looked good in the end, which I think was the whole point. So this was fine. Greg Hamilton interviewed Kevin Owens backstage. He said, "I'm sorry to interrupt you." And Kevin Owens called him out on it and said, "You're sorry to interrupt me, but you're going to do it anyway." He said that he showed the NXT title is the real prize when he stepped on John Cena's U.S. title last Monday night. This prompted chants of NXT from the crowd. Be interesting if this sparked something of a WWE versus NXT war on TV or amongst the fans. But then I have flashbacks to that Nexus angle 5 years ago and what happened at SummerSlam. And I have no interest in seeing that happen again, especially with John Cena involved. I have absolutely no interest in seeing a repeat of what we saw 5 years ago. So Owens promised tonight would be the last anybody would ever see of Sami Zayn. Tag Team Championship, Blake and Murphy defending against Kaz and Enzo. Another okay match. Nothing wrong with it. Just felt very short. I thought Big Kaz looked really good. You know, he got the hot tag later in the match, and he was just firing on all cylinders, just going nuts in there. Everything he hit looked good. And then he tagged back out to Enzo Amore. Enzo Amore, mind you, was still laying dead on the apron after having the crap beaten out of him only a few minutes early. I mean, this guy was having the shit beaten out of him. He was all but dead, made the tag, and then, you know, 3 minutes later, not even, Big Cass tags him back in. So he tagged in the dead guy just so he could help him up to the top rope. He wanted to do that missile launcher, rocket launcher finish, whatever they're calling it, where he kind of launches Enzo off the top for the big splash. Because I guess they must use their finishing move. Now listen, okay? Nobody was more angry than I was when I used to play Mortal Kombat at the arcade back in the day. And the guy would say, you know, "Finish him." And then I would fuck up the fatality and just, like, punch the guy in the face and win. Okay? That used to bug the crap out of me. I mean, I was pissed when that used to happen. Which was frequently, because I just wasn't quick enough, I guess, on the button combos. I was one of those button mashers that just hits the buttons and hopes something good happens. I so badly wanted to just hit that finish and rip the guy's spleen out. Nothing gave me more pleasure. But the point is, I still won. That's the point, right? To win the match. So you can't hit your finish. So what? Just punch the guy in the fucking face and win the titles. A rookie mistake by Big Cass here in this match. This allowed Alexa Bliss to run down to the ring, and she attacked Carmella from behind, turning Alexa Bliss heel in the process and distracting Colin Cassidy. He goes outside to check on what's going on here, and he ends up getting super kicked in the face, and so the other guy knocks Enzo off the top rope. They pin Enzo Amore and retain their tag team titles. I thought, if anything, Carmella would be the one turning heel, but it actually makes sense when you really think about it. Remember that segment a few weeks ago where Blake and Murphy went up to Alexa backstage? Okay, actual storyline continuity here. A rare find in WWE, but you are more likely to find it here on NXT than you will on Raw or SmackDown. NXT Women's Championship. Sasha Banks defending against Becky Lynch. This was a great match. One of the best women's matches I've ever seen in a WWE ring. Probably, you know, I was thinking about this because people have been asking me, oh, is it the best match you've ever seen? I would say that it's probably the best women's match I've seen in WWE since the days of the Jumping Bomb Angels. And one of the best matches, not just women's matches, one of the best matches of any kind all year so far in WWE. And there have been some good ones. You know, I think back to the triple threat at the Royal Rumble. But this is up there with the best of them, I think, for 2015. I don't think I can call it the best women's match that I've ever seen, because I still might give the edge to Charlotte and Natty last May. It was actually a year ago this month, right around the same time, at the very first TakeOver show that they did. They did Arrival in February, then it became TakeOver, and they've used the TakeOver name ever since. I'd have to go back maybe and watch that one over again, but that was a freaking awesome match. That one went like 16 minutes. It had emotion. That was the one where Ric Flair was in his daughter's corner, Bret Hart was in Natty's corner. It was so great. This match went just as long. It went 15 minutes, 28 seconds on the Diva stopwatch. You know, they say it's the little things that can make a match feel much more special. I love the fact that they had the camera backstage with that brooding music following both women to the gorilla position before their entrances. That's something they usually reserve for the men in the main event. But they didn't do that with Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens on this show. But they did it with Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch. And I feel like it made it feel more like a main event. Sasha retained the title, grabbed Becky's arm for the divorce court move off the top rope, right into the bank statement for the submission. Sasha Banks is just, I mean, what can you say? You know, she's on fire right now. Becky Lynch, when the match was over, got a standing ovation from the crowd. They started humming the opening of her theme song. She was clearly emotional. I was getting a little annoyed with some of the chants from the crowd all night, but they really shined here, I thought. It was really a cool thing to see them kind of give her props when the match was over and show that respect. And she was, you know, she was great too. Becky Lynch, you know, you got to give her credit too. It takes two to tango. She held up her own. She's very good also at what she does. And I told you that last week. I said this match was my pick to steal the show, and steal it they did. This was a great match that everybody should go out of their way to see. And the main event was for the NXT Championship, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens walked out in a John Cena, the champ is here, U.S. title shirt, which was just fucking brilliant. Sami Zayn went after him very hard at the beginning of the match. He went right after him. They brawled into the crowd. Kevin Owens teased a powerbomb on the concrete. But while he got Sami up in the air, Zayn grabbed onto part of the bleachers and saved himself from sure death. Unfortunately for poor Sami, the powerbomb would come back to bite him after all. Powerbomb on the apron by Kevin Owens a few minutes later. And that was it for Sami Zayn. Referees came out to check up on him. Owens kept going after him. They kept shoving him back. I thought they were going to call for the DQ, but they never did. In fact, they never called for anything. So this went on for a little bit. Eventually, Owens threw Zayn back into the ring. Referees are just trying to tell him, don't do this, which didn't make any sense, because unless the match was over, then it would make sense. We never heard a bell. The announcers never said anything. As far as we all know, the match was still in progress. So what business is it of the referees to tell Kevin Owens that you can't go after your opponent, right? If they think Sami is hurt, then they should have just called the match off, but they never did. So that was one of the things that was kind of stupid about this. William Regal came out. He tried to stop Kevin Owens, but Owens gave him a headbutt knocked him out of the ring. Owens went outside the ring. He yelled at somebody at ringside, maybe JoJo. He just yelled at them. He said, "Move!" And he took the chair. Yeah, that's one of the things I love about the Kevin Owens character. He's usually so calm, it's kind of unsettling to watch him. But when he gets frustrated and he screams, he's even scarier. He's kind of out of control. So he goes to hit Sami Zayn with the chair. It looked like they were holding up, waiting for the music to play, but it didn't play soon enough. So he did hit Zayn with the chair anyway, but then the music hit with an opening very similar to his TNA theme. Although the rest of his music, oh my God, I'm hoping that it's just placeholder music. I mean, I've heard better music in elevators. So out walks Samoa Joe, using the Samoa Joe name, wearing a Samoa Joe shirt. Not Joey Samoa, not Bazooka Joe, not Jokozuna, Samoa Joe. And the crowd at Full Sail ate it up. Everybody went nuts. Comes face to face in the ring with Kevin Owens, who bails. Crowd chanted, "Holy shit, this is awesome." They stared at each other forever until Kevin Owens left, and then eventually Kevin Owens came back out. He teased that he was going to get in the ring, but then he thought better of it and left again. The crowd chanted, "What a bummer," which I thought was funny. I just thought this whole thing was just so well done. I can almost excuse the lack of a finish. Almost. But not completely. I mean, really, is it so hard to ring the bell? Is it that hard? Just pick up the hammer and tap the bell 3 times. That's all you gotta do. It takes minimal effort. So much like, remember that Booker T. Triple H match on Raw like 12 years ago or something where the match just never ended. They never called for the bell. They never announced the winner. As far as I know, that match is still in progress. But I did think this was great. Kevin Owens now has heat with Finn Balor, who is the number one contender. Sami Zayn, right? That rivalry is on the back burner right now because he's having surgery. I think it's a torn rotator cuff. So much like Hideo Itami, Sami, it looks like, is going to be out for quite a while. But when he comes back, that feud, you know that feud is far from finished. John Cena, they've got their match at Elimination Chamber next Sunday. And now Samoa Joe. You know, they even teased he may have something to do with Hideo Itami when Itami got attacked in the parking lot and Owens went walking by. I don't think it'll be revealed that Kevin Owens had anything to do with it, but they kind of sort of teased it. And when Itami comes back, you got to wonder, you got to think he's going to be looking for the championship. If Kevin Owens is the champion, then I'm sure Itami will probably come right for him. So lots of irons in the fire right now for a guy who some people thought would never even get a look by WWE. He hasn't even been on TV a full 6 months, and he's feuding with 4 different people. Maybe Regal, too, after that headbutt. I just think it's great. I think this guy is the closest thing we've got to a true heel in wrestling right now. Brock Lesnar probably would have been number one on that list, but Brock Lesnar, you can't call him a heel anymore. So I think Kevin Owens is probably the closest thing we've got right now, and he's the champion. That's the way it should be. I'm still waiting on that classic Zayn versus Owens battle once Sammy gets healthy. I hope he does. And if Owens still has the title and is not on the main roster yet, they could do the match. You know what? They could do the match in December. They usually have an end-of-the-year takeover special. They could maybe, if Sammy can get back in time, if Owens is still the champion or loses it and gets the belt back or whatever, they could do that match in December on the TakeOver show like they did in Ring of Honor on that Final Battle. Remember that? Final Battle 2011 in December of that year. They had the big blow-off match between El Generico and Kevin Steen. It was that ladder war. That match. You know, unfortunately, those are the kind of matches that come back to haunt you. And I think that's what we're seeing now with Sami Zayn. I guess from what I understand, that shoulder injury is one that dates all the way back to his ROH days. It was always kind of there. It was nagging at him. I mean, he's been in NXT for like 2 or 3 years now, but I guess at some point the chickens come home to roost, and that's what we're seeing now with Sami Zayn with this old injury from his ROH days. But, I mean, that ladder war they had, 4 years ago now, that was a brutal match. Just brutal, but that's what happens, man. I mean, you have matches like that, and unfortunately, you fast forward a few years, and it comes back to bite you on the ass. So hopefully he comes back healthy, and we can see them hook up one more time. Because now we've seen 2 matches between them, basically with no finish. And at some point, I know these 2 guys can go out there and have like a 15 or 20 minute classic. I hope they have a chance to do that. You know what? Maybe it'll happen on the main roster one day. Maybe it's not going to happen in NXT. Maybe it'll happen at WrestleMania one day. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Richmond, Virginia. Show was highlighted by an awesome confrontation between John Cena and Kevin Owens. More Kevin Owens talk here. And also Dean Ambrose being set up as the challenger to Seth Rollins' WWE Championship at the Elimination Chamber show. Not in a chamber match, but they will be wrestling for the championship in a singles match on that show. We had Sheamus beat Ryback in the opener. Two of them will be in the Elimination Chamber match for the IC title. Sheamus is my pick to win. Neville got some interview time in the ring with Renee Young. He did fine, I thought. The announcers did not make fun of his accent, thank God. Not yet, anyway. Give them time. This brought out jobber to the stars, Bo Dallas, who talked about being the longest reigning NXT champion of all time, which absolutely destroyed whatever shred of credibility that title may have had in the eyes of the fans. Thankfully, Kevin Owens would restore it later in the show. Dallas attacked Neville's knee that he had hurt the night before at Payback, and then he retreated to ringside to do commentary for Neville's match, his rematch with King Barrett. Barrett beat him with the bullhammer, and then Dallas attacked Neville after the match, which sets up a program between the two, and I'm guessing probably a match next Sunday on the network, since Neville was inexplicably left out of the Elimination Chamber match for the Intercontinental Championship. I have no idea why you would leave him out of that. You know, maybe if they had gone with my idea and linked up Bo Dallas with Bray Wyatt, then maybe Bo Dallas would have something going for him and Neville could maybe beat him, and then you could transition Neville into a feud with Bray Wyatt. You know, I actually think Wyatt and Neville, I don't even know why. I just feel like Wyatt and Neville have good chemistry. Did they wrestle on NXT? They might have. I honestly don't remember. I've never seen a match between the two of them, so I don't know. I just have this feeling that they would have good chemistry. They could probably have some good matches. I know it's hit or miss with Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt does not always have good matches. I just feel like, I don't know, for some reason, a guy like Neville, he could probably go in there with him, a smaller, faster, quicker guy, and have some good matches with him. But instead, there is no association between Bo Dallas and Bray Wyatt. It's just a dead feud that nobody cares about because nobody cares about Bo Dallas. Rusev came out alone and was ranting and raving, and he said, "There's no Lana tonight." At Payback, he knows how to speak our stupid English, and he could have said, "I quit," but he never did. He's not wrong, you know. I mean, have you seen how most kids speak English on social media these days? Is it even English? I'm not even sure what language they're speaking most of the time. I'm really not. So Rusev is actually not incorrect in making that statement. Lana quit because she's weak, he said. Lana did come out. She tried to explain that she was only looking out for Rusev. She couldn't stand to see him in pain. And she claimed that he was, in fact, saying, "I quit," just doing it in Bulgarian. And this just completely, he flipped out at this point. By the way, Rusev is apparently Bulgarian again. She referred to him as the Bulgarian Brute, which she hasn't done in a long time. His new Titantron video that popped up on YouTube has the word Bulgaria in it. There's no more pictures of Vladimir Putin anywhere. I mean, if that's the case, then why is he still carrying around the star of the Russian Federation? That's what I want to know. Rusev called her a liar, told her to leave. "Go back to where you came from," he said. Lana walked off looking all sad. Later in the show, Dolph Ziggler beat Stardust and announced that he would be in the Intercontinental title Elimination Chamber match when Lana walked back out, went into the ring, hesitated a little bit, and ended up kissing Dolph Ziggler. Not a bad consolation gift for having to kiss Sheamus' ass last month. You know, if you told me that I'd have to kiss Sheamus' ass in order to kiss Lana, not once but twice, the way that Dolph did here, I'm not going to lie, I'd probably consider it. So good on Dolph. She did kiss him a second time before Rusev finally came out. They looked like they were stalling, kind of waiting for Rusev to come out, like Dolph was looking around. And I don't know if he was just trying to sell it like, wait a minute, is Rusev going to attack me here? Or if they, again, if they were just stalling. It looked like they were stalling. It was very awkward. But he did finally come out. He laid out Ziggler. Lana then slapped Rusev across the face. He got the crazy eyes like he was about to destroy her when Dolph Ziggler, defender of PG, remember that little kids watch this show, and he laid out Rusev with a zigzag before he could do anything heinous to Lana. And this was the best part, and this is such just a perfect thing to happen to Dolph Ziggler, of all people, just the way that he's generally treated in WWE and how he's made to look like a fool most of the time. He goes to hold the ropes open for Lana so she can exit the ring. And she probably just didn't see him. She wasn't paying attention. She ended up exiting on a different side of the ring and just completely left him standing there looking like a fool. It was just... Dolph looked like such a dweeb standing there. And then he kind of shrugs his shoulders like, all right. I laughed. This, to me, has Mil Muertes and Katrina from Lucha Underground written all over it. I could see it coming down. Here's how I see this probably happening, okay? Because I don't think they're going to go with my Tyler Breeze idea for the Elimination Chamber. They should, but I don't think they necessarily will. So what I could see happening more realistically, it comes down to Rusev and Dolph Ziggler in the chamber. Lana somehow costs Dolph the match. You know, it looks like she does it by accident, or maybe she just blatantly does it on purpose. Whatever. Helps Rusev win the Intercontinental title, and when the match is over, we find out it was one giant ruse. So basically, they could still do the finish that I pitched for the Cena match at Payback. Just give Rusev the Intercontinental title instead of the U.S. title. Okay? If they're not going to go with the Breeze idea. That is absolutely the way I could see this going down. And probably, as of right now, I mean, we have a week. I'm not going to do my predictions yet for the Chamber show, but that's probably how I see this match ending. Bray Wyatt pinned Dean Ambrose with Sister Abigail after interference from J&J, because why the hell not? He beats him every other time they've wrestled, so why should this be any different? I know Ambrose did finally pin Bray on SmackDown, but I told you people, if it happens on SmackDown, it didn't happen. So, to me, that doesn't count. And I love how Wyatt pinned... think about this. I love how Bray Wyatt pinned Dean Ambrose on this show. Dean Ambrose got pinned. He got beat on the same show where, at the end, he was to be named the number one contender for the WWE Championship. It's just hilarious. It really is. It is hilarious sometimes the way they book these things. New Day against Tyson Kidd and Cesaro, rematch for the tag team titles, went to a no contest. It was a nothing match. I mean, this was shit. You take these two teams and put them in the ring for 5 minutes. I mean, come on. You know, I was looking forward to seeing another match, maybe not as long as the one they had at Payback, but I just was so upset when this was over. So they didn't really, it wasn't a match so much as it was more of an angle to set up other teams coming out so they can hype up the Chamber match, because there's going to be a tag team title Elimination Chamber match next Sunday. So we had the Lucha Dragons come out, Los Matadores, the Ascension, the primetime players. Basically, the main event roster came out to the ring. Raw was invaded by the main event roster. We're not going to get the NXT invasion, but we'll get the invasion of the main event roster. So the primetime players are going to be a part of this whole thing, which is good. That's good to see. Kid and Cesaro will be in there. I guess that makes six when you throw New Day in there. Los Matadores, the Ascension, fighting for the tag team titles. Here's my question. Why not Luke Harper and Eric Rowan? They just reunited. They destroyed Fandango and Zack Ryder on this same show. Yet they don't have a place in the Elimination Chamber match next Sunday. But those guys do? Los Matadores need to be in the chamber? The Ascension needs to be in the chamber? I don't get it. Sometimes I just don't get it. I don't understand why they do what they do. We then had the John Cena Open Challenge, which brought out Kevin Owens, although not for a match. This was, I thought, just a fantastic segment. One of the best on Raw all year long. Owens made it very clear to John Cena, don't feel too bad about Sami Zayn's injury, because it wasn't you who caused it, it was me. It was Kevin Owens. And John Cena tried to give Owens some veteran advice. Owens got very upset. He reminded Cena that he has 15 years of experience in this business, even more than John Cena, which isn't true, by the way. I think Cena has him beat by like a year. But it makes for a nice story. You know, at least they're actually acknowledging the fact that this guy is not a rookie. He actually had a career elsewhere before coming to WWE. When do they ever do that? Never. But they did it here. So I like that. Owen said he's not wrestling Cena tonight, but one day the two of them are going to meet and Owens will beat him. He then kicked John Cena in the gut, shoved him into the ropes, caught him coming off with the beautiful pop-up powerbomb. This looked tremendous. So tremendous they replayed it at least four more times throughout the rest of the show. Cena got some good height on that powerbomb, and so this was great. And then Kevin Owens the reigning NXT champion, threw down the United States title and stepped on it. And then he mocked Cena with his "you can't see me" gesture. This was glorious. That's how you make a new star. Later in the night, we saw Kevin Owens backstage with Triple H, who made a match, I presume non-title. I don't believe it's for the championship, either championship. Oh my God, can you imagine if it was title for title? John Cena won the NXT championship. I don't want to give them any ideas. But they made a match between John Cena and Kevin Owens for the Elimination Chamber. Now, when I first saw Kevin Owens walk out on Monday night, my initial reaction was, please do not pin this man. For the love of God, whatever you do, please don't beat him. Because Owens is special, you know, and Owens, you know, he also needed momentum going into the TakeOver special, showing up on Raw 2 days before and getting pinned by John Cena. Even though he is John Cena, the biggest star in the company, that would not have been good for Kevin Owens. So I was happy that they didn't do that. But that was my first reaction. Don't do this. He's special. This guy is money. Don't beat him right out of the gate. You know, for a lot of people, that's the first time they've ever seen Kevin Owens. First impressions are everything. And I think the way that a guy like him, I mean, he's a great wrestler, but the way that a guy like him can really make money and really get under people's skin as a heel is on the microphone. So instead of doing a match, they went with what he does best, which is he talks. And he's very good at it. So I was happy to see them go in that direction. But, you know, it's not, I don't want to see him lose to John Cena. Let me just say that first before I get into this. I don't want to see him lose to John Cena. But that being said, I mean, this may be an unpopular opinion. I'm going to say it anyway. If the plan is not for Kevin Owens to be a regular part of the main roster, or at least make semi-regular appearances on Raw and SmackDown, then Kevin Owens should not beat John Cena at the Elimination Chamber. At all. If they want to send Samoa Joe out there to cause the distraction, and maybe that's what causes Kevin Owens to lose, that's cool. You know, at least it furthers their feud on NXT. But John Cena should win. As much as it pains me to say that, because Kevin Owens beating John Cena and then going right back down to NXT for another 6 months makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Cena is the face of the company. He is the top dog, okay? I don't care if he has the secondary title, okay? He is still the number one guy in that company. If Kevin Owens is good enough to beat the number one guy in that company, then there is no reason for him to be still in developmental. And I know Triple H talks about it like a third WWE brand, but it's not. It is still developmental. You've got people like Baron Corbin and Dana Brooke on the roster. It is developmental. And if Kevin Owens is good enough to beat John Cena, then he belongs on Raw and SmackDown more often. If that's the plan, great. Great, let him beat Cena. But he's got so many irons in the fire right now on NXT. I mean, I don't bother reading the taping results and spoilers and all that, so I don't know what's going on over the next 4 weeks. I like to keep it that way. But he's got a lot of irons in the fire right now. I doubt very seriously that the plan is to move him up to the main roster permanently or every other week or something along those lines. I don't think that's the plan. And if it isn't, you cannot beat your top star with a developmental guy. You just shouldn't do that. They've done a good job of making this U.S. Open Challenge feel special. When the day comes that somebody actually beats John Cena and wins that championship, it's going to be a huge deal. I know this match isn't for the title, but still, Cena should not be beaten unless there is a bigger plan here. I thought it was great a few weeks ago the way they protected Adrian Neville in his match with John Cena. They left it up to your imagination whether or not he would have kicked out, Cena would have kicked out of the Red Arrow. Neville didn't lose. But Neville's also a main roster guy now, right? He's not on NXT anymore. He has moved up. He has graduated up to the main roster. So that makes sense. Kevin Owens beating John Cena or doing some finish. I mean, I guess they could do something kind of like the Neville finish where Cena doesn't beat him, Owens wins, but it's like on a DQ. Cause, you know what? Maybe Joe runs in. Maybe that's how you do it. Maybe that is the best way to approach this thing. I don't know if they want Samoa Joe on the main roster, even just for one shot. I just don't think that they want him on TV yet. But maybe that would be the best thing. send Joe out there to not distract him into a freaking AA, but send him out there to actually go down to the ring and do something where the referee calls for the bell and Kevin Owens wins, but he doesn't really get a full clean win, pinfall win over John Cena, and more importantly, John Cena doesn't have to beat him clean in the middle of the ring. That might be the best way to go. I really think the timing of this is really shitty. I mean, I'm excited as all hell for the match. I want to see it. I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's really cool that they're doing this, but the timing is not great at all. And I think the Joe finish I just mentioned probably is the best thing they could possibly do. But like I said, if the plan is not to bring Owens up more regularly or permanently to the main roster, he already got one over on Cena Monday night, right? He laid out Cena in the middle of the ring. I just, as much as it pains me to say it, John Cena should not lose that match. Because it just doesn't make sense. It just does not make sense for Kevin Owens to waltz in there, to do what he did on Monday, come back this Sunday, and beat John Cena, which not a lot of people do, and then just go right back down to Full Sail for the foreseeable future. Seems a little anticlimactic to me. So we'll see how they handle this. But I think the Joe finish might be the way to go. Nikki Bella retained her Divas title over Naomi. 6:28 on the stopwatch. Tamina just ran in for the DQ. You would think Naomi would be pissed. She just cost her the championship, but nope. She joined in the attack on Nikki. 2-on-1 until Paige returned, made the save, and then she turned on Nikki and laid her out with the Rampage. Final segment was a celebration ceremony with Seth Rollins and the Authority. Dean Ambrose crashed the party. He ended up dragging Rollins over to a pile of very strategically placed cinder blocks next to the timekeeper's table. He was threatening to cave Seth Rollins' head in the way that Rollins did to him last year. Apparently, this is acceptable television. This is acceptable behavior. But the curb stomp, well, we can't have that. I just want to make sure I understand how this works. Caving a man's head in, or threatening to, on cinder blocks, even just the mere threat of doing that, that's okay. But taking your boot and putting it on top of a guy's head and driving him down into the mat, that is unacceptable. I feel like I need some sort of like an actual list, like a physical piece of paper I can refer to so I can get my story straight here on what is acceptable right now these days in WWE and what isn't, because it just seems all out of whack to me. Stephanie McMahon relented. She said, "Don't do it." They granted Dean Ambrose what he wanted. They gave him a championship match at Elimination Chamber against Seth Rollins. And so Ambrose spared his life. Ambrose ended up getting pedigreed a few minutes later by Seth Rollins and left for dead to end the show. I have no idea why Dean Ambrose had to get laid out here, but he did. But whatever. You know, we've got ourselves a singles match between Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins for the WWE Championship. We have John Cena one-on-one with Kevin Owens, and we have two Elimination Chamber matches all on that show next Sunday. That makes Elimination Chamber next Sunday a must-see show. And I give them a lot of kudos for that, because this show came out of nowhere. It's only going to be 2 weeks since the last pay-per-view before they give us this one. So you think to yourself, well, how good could this show possibly be? You know what? The way the lineup is looking right now, it's looking pretty damn good. And I would say that if they're looking to get people to sign up for the network and giving them a card that they want to see, I think they're doing as good of a job as they can. Now, I can see where some people might look at that and say, well, who cares, right? Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, they've had a million matches. Who cares? You know, I was kind of hoping that we would get Rollins and Ambrose for the championship as the one-on-one main event of Payback. But they made it a four-way, and that was fine. Those two guys had a kick-ass match a couple of weeks ago on Raw. We have yet to see them go one-on-one for the championship. That's the match that I've wanted to see this whole time. We don't need multi-man matches and bullshit stipulations and cinder blocks and ladders and briefcases and tables and chairs and all that crap. Just put those two guys in the ring one-on-one and have the championship on the line. I guarantee you, if they give those guys some time, I guarantee you those guys are going to go out there. They're going to tear the house down. They're going to have a great match. I don't expect Dean Ambrose to win the championship at all, but I do think they're going to go out there and have a kick-ass match. You throw in John Cena, Kevin Owens, which is a match we've never seen before. Two chamber matches. It's pretty hard to have a bad Elimination Chamber match. I mean, maybe there's been one or two before. Maybe Khali was in it or something. I don't know. But it's looking pretty good to me right now. And that's not even the full card. I think they may have added Naomi and Nikki for the championship. I think. I could be wrong. So we'll see as they flesh out the card if they add another one or two matches. But even if the card just remains as is, again, it's a network special. You have a network subscription, you just flip the network on. Who cares how many matches are there? But I'm looking forward to this show in a way that I did not think I would be looking forward to it. So I give them a lot of credit for putting together a very impressive lineup so far for Elimination Chamber. ProWrestlingTees.com is your one-stop shop for all things Sound Off. We've got a ton of different t-shirt designs up there right now, including the official Sound Off logo shirt, the Eat Sleep Sound Off repeat shirt, and original designs as well, like Let Me School You, Son, and It's Not Rocket Science, People. And it's not rocket science that you should go right now to our store, ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff, and get yourself a shirt, maybe two. They ship all over the world, so if you are an international fan of the show, fear not, you can get your own Sound Off shirt. You can also pay via credit card or PayPal, whatever works best for you. So head on over to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. Buy yourself a Sound Off shirt, and the next time you go to Monday Night Raw, TNA, Ring of Honor, or just out with the family, you can represent the Sound Off with an official Sound Off t-shirt. Again, visit ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff and get your shirt right now.
You fucking crazy, man. You sound insane. Do you realize that? You should be medicated.
There is no Impact review this week since they aired last year's Slammiversary pay-per-view instead of running a new show. For reasons that I can't figure out. Memorial Day isn't until tomorrow. What the hell does that have to do with airing a show on Friday? But that's okay, because boy do we have a story to talk about here this week. This is the week that everybody officially lost their minds. So I would say grab the popcorn, because you're going to need it for this one. The bigger story than reviewing an episode of Impact has to do with the future of Impact Wrestling itself on TV, at least here in the U.S. According to a story broken by Dave Meltzer in this week's Wrestling Observer newsletter, Impact will not be renewed by Destination America effective the end of September. It is effectively being canceled. And that you can say that it's being canceled because when they signed the contract with Destination America, it was not just for 1 year. If it was a one-year contract and Destination America didn't want to have anything to do with them anymore, you would say, all right, it's not being renewed. The show, the contract, whatever, it's not being renewed. It was a multi-year deal. So if they're getting out of the contract and there's another 1 or 2 years on it, it's not just a matter of not renewing. They're being fucking canceled. So he was the one who broke the story. And what a shitstorm this has set off with members of the TNA Asylum. And I'm not talking about the old asylum they used to run in Nashville. I'm talking about the actual, literal asylum, where many of their fans are seemingly locked up. Meltzer says that only days before Destination America announced that it was moving Impact from Fridays to Wednesdays, which was a very sudden move, and it is a move that is happening effective June 3rd. Impact will now air on Wednesdays. Within days of saying that, before then, they had already opted against renewing Impact come the end of September, before the new fall season begins. This was apparently outlined in a Destination America memo that was circulated either May 11th or May 12th, so that's probably when the decision was made, or at least formally announced internally. Meltzer was first to report that Destination America has an out clause in their contract with TNA. He reported that a few weeks ago, saying that they can't exercise it in September, and apparently they have decided to do just that. Their position is that, you know, while the ratings are better than most of their other shows, the ratings did not justify the cost of the show. And also, you can have good numbers, right? You can have good numbers all you want to, but if most of your advertisers don't want to advertise their stuff during your flagship show, it's not much of a flagship show. Flagship show's more about more than just ratings. Got to have advertisers. And apparently there were advertisers who went out of their way to say, we don't want our stuff advertised during wrestling. So all of those factors worked against them. They wanted it kept secret, just like the situation last year with Spike and TNA. Remember that whole fiasco last year with the TMZ story that leaked it? This is unfolding almost exactly the same way. Meltzer says they had the live Impact a few weeks ago that TNA and the network had very high hopes for. Destination America even took an ad out for it in USA Today. And in the end, the show did the second lowest number of any Impact show since they started airing on that network in January. Somehow, the numbers went backward, not forward, even though they had a semi-live show. It was like a two-hour tape delay. But it was the first show that wasn't in the can for like weeks and weeks and weeks, and yet that show did poorly than even the tape shows did. And that was probably the nail in the coffin, or one of the nails anyway, in the coffin for TNA. You know, or was it? Because it may have been something else that happened. And this is, I mean, this is going to sound unbelievable. And I can't sit here and tell you that this is absolutely 100% true. It was one outlet, one online outlet that reported it. They're sticking to their guns. But there have been other comments made by Meltzer and others that would seem to kind of back this up. So just keep that in mind as I relay the story to you here. We talk about the bad ratings potentially being a nail in the coffin, but check this out. The boys over at the Voices of Wrestling podcast on their latest show claim they have the screenshot sent to them by an unnamed wrestler, I presume somebody on the TNA roster, about an email. Now, I don't know if it's a screenshot of the actual email or just a text message from the wrestler talking about the contents of the email in question. But it's about an email that TNA president Dixie Carter sent, where she refers to the suits at Destination America as dummies. In the email, refers to them as dummies. In sending the email, though, she accidentally CC'd the president of Destination America. I swear, you can't make this shit up. It is impossible. It is an impossibility to make this shit up. Voices of Wrestling is sticking to their story. They're not retracting it. They're not running away from it. They're not hiding from it. And Dave Meltzer, who got into a Twitter exchange with Billy Corgan, of all people, who was doing his best to knock Dave's report, not refute it. He never once said it wasn't true, but he was knocking it and knocking Meltzer's credibility. Meltzer tweeted something that would seem to back up the Voices of Wrestling report about the email. This is what Meltzer said to Billy Corgan. He says, I have the exact same documentation that MJ being Mike Johnson of PW Insider, had on the same type of story. You are better than Russo. Don't end up the same way. Now, that is in reference to TNA's other big snafu last year that may have cost them their spot on Spike TV, where Vince Russo accidentally emailed Mike Johnson of PW Insider about some creative stuff instead of Mike TNA, who the email was intended for. I guess the wrong Mike came up in his email field, and he emailed that shit to PW Insider. I'm starting to think there needs to be some kind of moratorium in TNA on the use of email as a means of communication. Maybe they should start using pigeon carriers instead. Maybe that'll be the safer way for them to go. How something like this can happen once is a question worth asking. I mean, people make mistakes, right? Shit happens. It could happen to the best of us. Anything's possible. But twice? Twice? I mean, if this is true, that makes 2 years in a row this has happened. 2 years in a row that an email may have cost TNA its TV deal. Now, here's the deal, okay? Meltzer is not running with this story as the lead in his newsletter unless he has talked to people who know for sure what is going on. He also says he has documentation. He has emails that back all of this up. Emails between himself and Dixie Carter where he tried to confirm certain things with her, and she ignored him, and she ignored him, and she ignored him, and then finally, he double-sourced it and said, I'm running with the story. That's exactly how this whole thing played out here. Now, he has documentation. Obviously, he's not going to share that publicly, especially if we're talking about private emails here. I don't even know what the legality of that would be. You know, but he says, listen, the situation is fluid. Destination America can always have a change of heart. You know, the decision not to renew TNA came with the understanding that the show would be would continue on Fridays until the show was done. All of a sudden, they got switched to Wednesday. So who knows? Maybe Destination America changes its mind if they move to Wednesdays and suddenly they find 500,000 new viewers that come. I don't know where these people would be coming from, but if the numbers shoot up, you know, then good for them. That still doesn't mean that Meltzer is wrong or that he's a con man. and that Destination America has not made the call to dump them, I fully believe they have. What don't people understand about this? I don't know what's so hard. I really, you know, the TNA diehards and the TNA blowhards who are just going nuts about this, and even a few people on our own, like, Facebook group, I mean, most people, I think, see what's going on here. But there are people who still have this, they tote this line about how Meltzer can't be trusted, he's making stuff up. You know, Meltzer was the first person to report that TNA was moving from Spike to Destination America. Now that the news is bad, he's making stuff up? Ask yourself that question. Ask yourself if that makes any sense whatsoever. The answer is no, it doesn't. It's people who are in denial. Now, for its part, TNA issued a statement, finally, a few days later, on, now, they never referenced Meltzer by name, but they clearly were referencing his report, and maybe some other reports that were online. Maybe there were other people who were starting to spread false news, TNA's dying, that's very possible. But this was clearly aimed at Meltzer's report. Okay, now this is what they said. They said, it has come to our attention that several internet news sources have falsely attributed statements to TNA, its executives, and broadcasting partner. These false statements constitute defamation, and if necessary, we will seek all legal remedies available to us. End quote. Notice they never, not one time in that statement, said they were not being renewed by Destination America. Only vague talk about false statements, without saying what those false statements are. Where's the bullet point list of these supposed false statements? Remember that whole thing when WWE did its investigation, as much of a joke as that was? They did their investigation into CM Punk and his claims of the big, the growth on his back, and they had video footage that they cut of this guy's ass at the Royal Rumble, and they had like a bullet point list trying to refute some of the points that Punk made. Now, maybe they were full of shit, but at least they actually reacted, and they went step by step. Punk made these comments, and now they're refuting them. Now, that came like months later, but, you know, if these reports are so wrong, what's so wrong about them? They never said. They never made it clear exactly what false statements are floating around out there. Now they're threatening journalists. That's what it's come down to. They're now threatening journalists with lawsuits. This is the same woman, Dixie Carter, who went on Steve Austin's podcast and admitted that she asked their legal team at one time if they could subject their employees to lie detector tests to prevent news leaks. They don't have the money to pay their production people for months on end. But by God, we're going to sue Dave Meltzer. With what? Monopoly money? I would love to know where this money is coming from. They're so litigious all of a sudden. Where is that money coming from? As far as what they've told their talent, which is the other aspect of this, and why I think it's so egregious that they didn't go ahead and state step by step what these false statements were, because they have a bunch of wrestlers who work for them who are in the dark about this whole thing. The wrestlers are wondering what the fuck is going on here. They've told their talent nothing. The only thing they've told their talent is that they will address these reports at their next set of tapings. The next set of tapings isn't until June 24th. They're going to have their own wrestlers. They're going to leave them hanging for an entire month until they figure things out. I take that to mean they're hoping Destination America changes its mind before then, so they can claim all of these reports were false. If they're false, why wait a month? Why not address them now? You've got a whole roster of people wondering what's going on here. Are we going to be on TV? Am I going to have a job? And they're going to make them wait 4 weeks before they address these reports. That is just ridiculous. That is completely fucking ridiculous. That's how TNA conducts its business. Making vague, baseless threats, keeping their own employees in the dark. They won't tell them anything. I mean, the way they've handled this whole thing is so fucking stupid. It is so fucking embarrassing. It is so fucking unprofessional. You know, it's amazing to me. They've been in business for 13 years, and I ask myself every day, how is that possible? How is that possible? Now, that brings me to the fans. The very reason those highbrow advertisers want absolutely nothing to do with any of us, it's the general stereotype of what a wrestling fan is, right? This was on full display this week in the worst possible way. When this story first surfaced, I said I was sad. I went on Twitter, and I said I was sad to hear that, you know, these rumors that TNA may have finally run out of chances, that they may be kicked off the network. That's all I said. One of the Kool-Aid drinking diehards then chimed in and said, well, maybe in the U.S., but there's something called the rest of the world where TNA thrive. I'll assume he meant thrives. To which I responded, my first mistake, with a simple LOL. And I was blocked for it. The rest of the world apparently not being where this person resides. That would be someplace not of this earth. In fact, I learned this week that there are many TNA diehards, the hardest of hardcores, who are in such a state of denial. They are so defensive about even the slightest thing anybody says about TNA that isn't about how great they are, that there must be mental illness at play here. These people are mentally ill. They are. I said on Twitter, they're like a cult. A very small cult, I'll grant you, but a cult nonetheless. So let's sample some of these responses from these Martians on social media. I thought this would be an entertaining exercise here to do this. No shortage of material for sad tweet this week. Let me tell you, it was very hard to narrow it down. So I'm just going to get a lot of it out here instead of saving it for the end of the show. Although we will do a sad tweet later. Now, again, keep in mind, one of the reasons Destination America is reportedly dropping TNA is because they have barely any advertisers who are willing to advertise during Impact. Okay, so just keep that in mind. Here's one TNA disciple tweeting to the official Destination America Twitter account. This is what this person said. A big fuck you to @DestinationAmerica. Before I get off Twitter, I hope you all have a terrible day, you cock blowers. Apparently his, her, or its caps lock key was jammed when they wrote this, since it was all in caps they were shouting. Right, cock blowers. Slightly more classy, I suppose, than dick suckers. I can't imagine why any advertiser would not want to pitch their product or their service to people like this. This same person, in response to someone's tweet about the Ghost Asylum finale that aired on Destination America, this is what they said. Fuck Destination America, this horrible, shitty little channel. I wonder if this person was saying that about Destination America when they saved TNA and signed them to a deal in the first place. You think they were a horrible, shitty little channel then? I'm guessing not. Only after they dumped their precious TNA did they become small and shitty. Here's another one. This is a good one. Dave Meltzer equals Fox News. TNA equals any Democrat. That is all there is to it. I'm not even sure what the fuck that's supposed to mean. But I thought it was funny, so I included it. The same way it's funny if you get your balls caught in the zipper of your pants, which is to say, not funny at all. Dave Meltzer is the STD of dirt sheets. He just won't go away, this other person says. Well, you can say the same thing about TNA, can't you? TNA is the syphilis of pro wrestling. That's going to be my new motto. Responding to somebody else, here's what this person had to say. TNA says it's not true. I don't believe anything without hearing it from Bob Ryder or Dixie Carter's Twitter. For those who don't know who Bob Ryder is, he works for TNA behind the scenes. He used to work for WCW many years ago. He also, at that time, denied that WCW was going down the tubes, even as it was going down, he was denying it. So he's a great source of information. You know, before Baghdad Bob in Iraq, remember Baghdad Bob? Before him, there was Baghdad Bob Ryder in WCW. Nothing to see here. Everything is fine. Those WWF infidels will crumble at our feet. Anyway, Baghdad Bob sent out a tweet saying, for almost 13 years, some people have predicted we, being TNA, were going to go out of business. It is no more true today than it was then. #StandUp. Oh, God. And here I thought the whole Stand Up for WWE campaign was lame. They've somehow managed to top it. We now have a Stand Up campaign for TNA. What exactly are we standing up for? You know, nowhere in that tweet, again, did he deny Meltzer's story. He never said the story isn't true, just that the company is not dying, which is not what Meltzer said in his original report. You know why he doesn't know that? Because he didn't read the fucking thing. Most people, I'm willing to bet, did not read the story. They got bits and pieces of it from this website, and that website, this tweet, that tweet, here a tweet, there a tweet, everywhere a tweet, but they didn't read the actual fucking report. There was nothing in there about TNA going out of business, only that they're losing their TV deal. But that was enough for people to say, well, Bob Ryder said Dave Meltzer's report was false, even though that's not what he said at all. Then we have this guy here, saying TNA should sue Meltzer for slander. So I guess TNA has taken this guy's advice, because the next day, they put that statement out that sure made it seem like they were going to legally go after people as they see fit. I would love to be in that courtroom when that case goes to trial. They should let one of these goofs on Twitter take the case pro bono, so they don't have to pay an actual attorney to take the case. Your Honor, Dave Meltzer is a Nazi and fucks baby koala bears. I rest my case, no further questions. That's the whole case. See, Dave Meltzer is not out to get TNA. Jason Powell is not out to get TNA. Mike Johnson is not out to get TNA. None of these wrestling journalists, these writers, are out to get TNA. No TNA means one less promotion to write about, which means fewer fans, which hurts their business. Not just TNA's. Nobody of any significance in wrestling. I know there are fans on Twitter who would love for TNA to die. I don't understand that. But nobody of any significance in wrestling is taking pleasure in the demise of TNA, if this is the demise of TNA, and nobody is saying that it is. They can still survive this. But you know what? I've said this before. I mean, I just made the comment that anybody who wants to see TNA die is out of line, and I don't get the logic. But I have to say this. You know what? Maybe they should. Maybe they should go away. They have been afforded more opportunities than any other promotion in the world. They should have been dead years ago for all the stupid mistakes they've made. They are not smart so much as they are lucky. I'm tired of hearing, oh, TNA's been around 13 years, they must be doing something right. No, it's called luck. They were lucky that Spike took them on when WWE jumped back to USA. They were lucky that guys like Kurt Angle and Jeff Hardy, who I'm happy to see are doing much better in their lives now, but they were drug addicts who had no other place to go. They were lucky that Dixie Carter has a rich daddy who is willing to burn through millions of dollars to keep his daughter's vanity project afloat. Luck. That is the legacy that TNA leaves behind when they are done, whenever that may be. And if you think I'm kidding about the whole vanity thing, there were apparently cameras following Dixie around backstage at the last set of tapings. Remember that story I talked about last year? I think PW Insider may have been the first to report it at the time, about how Dixie was trying to get herself a reality TV deal. I don't know if that's what the cameras were following her around for last month, but it could very well be that. A vanity project. That is all this is to her. Don't let this mama bear bullshit fool you. I thought it would be appropriate to use a lyric from a Smashing Pumpkins song, given Billy Corgan's involvement with them. It's from a song called Pissant. This one goes out to all the delusional dwellers living in TNA land. Got me a ray gun, got me an altitude. Can't help feeling something's wrong with every one of you. Go see a psychiatrist, you wackos. As if that isn't bad enough, the move to Wednesdays came so suddenly that TNA has been forced to make changes to its taping schedule, which now looks like this. June 24th, Live Impact. Again, that's the next time that the roster will be together, and apparently the roster's not going to know anything until then. The next day, they have Impact tapings. June 26th, they have Impact tapings. And June 27th, they have Impact tapings. June 28th is their Slammiversary pay-per-view. They are back on pay-per-view for the first time in forever. I think the first time all year. That'll be on the 28th. That means that TNA is taping almost 3 months worth of television, quite possibly the final batch of shows before Destination America boots them off in September. They're taping those shows before Slammiversary, but they won't air until after the pay-per-view. So I don't know how that's going to work. And if you thought that was the end of all the bad TNA news this week, then guess again. TNA's week went from bad to worse when Eric Bischoff went and sued them. I think this is a fine way to wrap it up. For a company that's threatening to sue other people, they themselves were hit with a lawsuit this week. Bischoff, his son Garrett, who was a referee and later wrestled for TNA, remember he was with Aces and Eights, and Bischoff's business partner, Jason Hervey, the annoying older brother from the Wonder Years, that's how I'll always remember him, they have filed a lawsuit against TNA for $114,500.02. Very important to get those 2 cents in there. For unpaid money that is owed to them. As it breaks down, TNA owes Bischoff and Hervey over $100,000 for the months of January through March of this year, plus lawyer fees. Garrett's contract with TNA was for $26,000 a year. That was his base pay, plus $500 per match, per appearance. He's asking for $13,002 in unpaid salary. I guess that's where the 2 cents comes from. From October 2014 through March of this year when his contract expired. The biggest shock here to me is that Garrett Bischoff was still employed. He was still under contract to TNA until March. When was the last time he was even on television? Maybe TNA is threatening to sue Meltzer so they can pay back Bischoff and Hervey. This company is a clusterfuck. They should be embarrassed and ashamed of how they've handled this whole situation. As a PR person, I'm embarrassed for them. I'm even more embarrassed. Dixie Carter is somebody with a PR background. She ran a public relations firm before she became president of TNA. You would think somebody with a PR background like her would know how to handle a situation like this, and every single thing they've done so far is wrong. I don't think Dixie herself has made any public comments about this, but she's the president of the company. Every single thing they have done so far is wrong. It is embarrassing, it is pathetic, and it makes them look small and puny. And quite frankly, I mean, there are certain people here who were owed an apology, and it's nobody in TNA. But if I were Meltzer or anybody else, I wouldn't hold my breath waiting for that apology to come. Let's get away from all this negative business BS and talk about some fun wrestling. Lucha Underground this week. Another enjoyable show. Opened with Marty the Moth Martinez against Prince Puma. So Marty the Moth went from being rejected by Dario Cueto outside of the building and then storming the building, running in during a match, and being thrown out. I guess Dario maybe saw something in him. He considered him to be, maybe it was a bold move on his part, but I guess he gave him a job, or at least a tryout, and he put him in there with the Lucha Underground champion. Puma won with the 630 off the top rope, but not before he gave Marty the Moth a pretty decent amount of offense. Marty is the third member from that last season of Tough Enough to make the Lucha Underground roster. Ivelisse and Son of Havoc were also on that season with him. Ariane was the only member, I think, of that show left today on the WWE roster. And remember, she was the first one eliminated from that season of Tough Enough. Wrestling is funny like that sometimes. Hernandez came out after the match and teased coming down the steps to go after Puma, but decided against it. Those two will meet for the championship next week. Vampiro got a sit-down interview with Johnny Mundo. This was the best interview I have ever seen Mundo give in his life. He said he's not some guy in catering that Alberto can slap around. He did what he did last week to prove how good he really is. He doesn't care about Alberto's family or his past accomplishments. He is the man in Lucha Underground, not Alberto. But you already knew that, he said. And then he winked at the camera. This was great. This was great. I rag on his like promos and stuff because I still think that's the weakest part of his whole package. Otherwise, I mean, Johnny Mundo's an amazing performer. He could do things in there that very few other people can do. But, you know, talking is an important part of it. And every time I would hear this guy talk, it would just sound so forced and rehearsed. He's just not a good promo guy. But you turn him heel, and who knows? Maybe we're seeing a brand new side of Johnny Mundo that we never knew existed. Or maybe it was just, you know what? Maybe it was a very heavily edited, very heavily produced sit-down pre-tape that made him look good. But in reality, if you put a mic in his hands in front of a live crowd, he would just bomb. I don't know. All I know is that he knocked this one out of the park. And I think the Mundo character is, you know, he's a showboat by nature, right? He's a show-off kind of guy. A heel turn may have been the best thing for him. It fits the character better, I think, in a lot of ways. We had Daivari against Tejano. This feud is just not doing it for me. I don't really care about either one of these guys, Daivari especially. I'm not saying he's not good. He's one of those guys I look at, kind of like Chavo, who came over. And we'll get to Chavo in a second, but I just don't want to see these guys on TV. You know, I just don't. So anyway, they had a match. Big Rick interfered for the DQ, helping Daivari. So I guess he's now working as Daivari's hired help, since Daivari's character is, he's like a rich mogul. He's got a lot of money to throw around, so whatever. Katrina appeared in Dario Cueto's office and says that Mil Muertes wants Phoenix in a death match. And Dario obliges, and Katrina just disappeared. She vanished. In a separate vignette, we see Black Lotus walking by some train tracks, trying to make her way back to the temple to get revenge on Dario's brother, the monster locked away in the cage. Chavo Guerrero is back. Oh, joy. He tells Black Lotus's mystery lucha trainer, the guy that's basically been holding her captive now for weeks and trying to, you know, I guess get her ready to challenge this monster. And he just felt that she wasn't ready and she left anyway. So Chavo appeared and told the trainer if he wants her to live, he needs his help. He says that his family, the Guerreros and the Cuetos, have been at war for generations. The trainer says Chavo's debt to the Mexicans will be cleared. I assume that's the bounty or whatever they put on his head for all those many months ago when he injured Blue Demon. I remember he injured Blue Demon, put him out of action for a while, and there was some backstage vignette. It might have been actually with like Mil Muertes and Katrina or Conan or somebody who made it very clear to Chavo that there were some people who wanted him taken out back in Mexico. So I guess that's what he was referring to here. His debt will be cleared. It will be forgiven. If he can protect Black Lotus, and Chavo said he would protect her with his life, and that's how they left things. The main event was a lab. This show feels like it passes so quickly. I mean, it's only an hour long, but still, it just kind of zips on by. Ladder match main event for the trio's titles, the Crew, Mr. Cisco, Cortez Castro, and Bale, against Ivelisse, Son of Havoc, and Angelico. Another excellent match between these two teams. I love the spot where Cisco is climbing one of the ladders outside the ring, and Angelico just kind of tips it over, and Cisco falls through the window to Dario Cueto's office, the window that got punched out last week, or I should say knocked out with Alberto's head. Apparently they never bothered to replace it, or there was just some wood that was up there. And anyway, I think the wood may have gotten taken down, but whatever happened, he just kind of fell through the open hole and fell right into Dario's office. And then, even better, a few minutes later, out of nowhere, Cisco dives back through the window out onto Son of Havoc. So that was very creative. Angelico teased a dive off the ladder outside the ring, but instead he opted to climb back up onto the balcony that he dove off of a few weeks ago in that crazy dive. So he climbs back up onto the balcony, and he's about to do another insane dive. And before he can jump off, Castro's up there, comes up from behind, and canes him from behind with a kendo stick, leaves him laying. Okay, so Angelico is down. Back in the ring, Son of Havoc attempts a shooting star press onto Cisco. Cisco's laid out across a table. He does the shooting star press, but the table does not break. That must have sucked for Cisco. So table didn't break. Castro, meanwhile, starts climbing another ladder that's in the ring. He's ready to retrieve the titles. This match is going to be over. But Angelico, once again, risks his life flying off the balcony. Now, this balcony, I'm terrible at this kind of thing, but I'm guessing it's got to be every bit of 25 feet, 30 feet up there. He dives off the balcony. I can't even say he dives. He's like, it's like a running dive, right? He dives off this very high balcony. But he's also going at such a high rate of speed, he's got to go across, because between the ring and him, between the ring and the edge of that balcony where he dives off, are people. There are fans who are sitting there. So he's got to go a great distance to even make the ring. And he does, and in doing so, he does, it's like a missile drop kick. He nailed it perfectly. I give this guy a lot of credit. I mean, he could not have nailed this thing any more perfectly. He did a missile drop kick. He kicked Castro off the ladder, knocked him off. But I mean, this thing looked like, this made the original dive a few weeks ago look like a safety exercise compared to this. This guy did a missile drop kick. It's amazing. There's no protection on that. You're landing flat on your back. It's bad enough to take one of those bumps off the top rope. That's one of the moves that Daniel Bryan has done for years. It probably has him in the state that he's in right now. And we see Neville do it. Yeah, I always cringe even when Neville does it, because, you know, shit like that eventually catches up to you. You're doing this humongous dive off the top rope. You're landing flat on your back, on the back of your head. This guy did it from a 30-foot-tall balcony. It's insane. At least with the first dive, he dove onto somebody. Broke his fall. This time, there ain't nobody there to break his fall. This guy's out of his mind. It really, I mean, it looked like something out of a video game. I can't get over this. But anyway, stupid risk to take. Looked phenomenal. This allowed Ivelisse, mind you, Ivelisse still has a broken ankle. This allowed her to climb or hop up the ladder and pull down one of the titles for the win. So they retained their trios titles. Another crazy match that had the crowd on its feet by the time it was over. Go find this match. You will enjoy it. Back in his office, Dario Cueto, not pleased about what he has just seen. He gave the crew an ultimatum that they better win this match or else. So now we have to wait and see what happens to them. Another very enjoyable show. I have to say, though, aside from the main event and the Johnny Mundo interview with Vamp, I thought it was pretty standard stuff. Not the best overall episode of Lucha Underground, but the main event kicked ass. I have to say, I mean, there is no other wrestling show that is as consistently good and entertaining as Lucha Underground. NXT would be the closest thing. I love NXT, but there are weeks where NXT is a fairly dull show. Even the main event, it's not particularly great. Maybe it's a good match, it's not great. Even on weeks where the overall show kind of feels like, okay, we're just kind of treading water here, a bunch of short matches or vignettes, but the main event then, you know, blows you out of the water. I mean, there's no other show as consistently entertaining and fun for me as Lucha Underground. I'm still waiting on that announcement. I'm still waiting to hear that season two is a go. So even if we have to wait a few months between seasons, which would suck, at least I'll know, like, it's coming back. I'm getting worried. Every week that goes by that we don't have an announcement, I get more worried. Because I genuinely enjoyed this show. And I think if I didn't have it to review anymore, it would be very depressing. So I tell people all the time, listen, if you've never seen Lucha Underground before, maybe soon we'll hear that they have a much better TV deal. You know, maybe they'll be able to announce something like that. But right now, I know El Rey is available in a very small number of homes. It does air on Unimas in Spanish. You can watch it that way. There are other means online to find episodes, whether it's YouTube or Daily Motion or some other wrestling sites I know that are out there. Whatever you got to do, if you've never seen it before, just check it out. I think people hear Lucha. They hear Lucha Libre. And they automatically, I don't like Lucha Libre. You know, look, I've tried to watch episodes of AAA before, because they air here on, or have in the past. I don't know if they air on Galavision anymore, but yeah, I myself have tried to check out Lucha Libre, just pure Lucha Libre before, and it's kind of fun, but I can't really get into it. But Lucha Underground's a different kind of beast. I mean, they're using a lot of those guys from AAA, you know, down in Mexico, but this is just a very well-produced, coherent, consistently entertaining hour of wrestling. Every single week. I think that's probably the best compliment I can pay to it. And I've said it before, I'll say it again. If you've never tried it before, give it a shot. You know, it's different. When you first watch it, the way it's shot, like a movie almost, or a telenovela, like, some people don't like that. I wasn't a huge fan of the shooting style at first either, but I've gotten used to it, and I think it adds something to the show. You know, people are always clamoring for something different. I'm so tired of WWE. I'm so tired of TNA. The one thing you can't say about Lucha Underground is that it's exactly the same. You're getting something different. You're getting exactly what you wanted here. Who wouldn't want something different? That's the best thing they offer. It truly is something different than what you see every Monday night. And it's good. It's good to have some variety, and it's good to have some choice. So give it a shot if you've never tried it before. I think you'll like it. If you have questions for the mailbag, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. That's the same email address where you can direct any and all business inquiries to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you submit your question. You could also send MP3 audio questions. Just attach the question. Shouldn't be more than 30 seconds, give or take, in MP3 format. But always include the text of your question in the email as well. Not just in audio form. We actually have an MP3 question here that we're going to start with, and this comes from Andrew.
Greetings, Solemn Monster. This is Andrew from Chicago, Illinois. Long-time listener, first-time sound offer. And I recently watched NXT TakeOver and the debut of Samoa Joe. Even though there was no physicality between Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens, there was enough aurora in the air that you can sense that Samoa Joe was coming in and big changes were going to be coming in for the WWE. I would like to know, in your opinion, in the past, who do you felt was a wrestler that made his debut in a WWE that you felt was going to make an immediate impact in the future of the WWE?
So if we're talking which superstar made their debut in WWE that I felt was going to make an immediate impact, the first person that comes to mind is Brock Lesnar. I mean, and I'm not talking when Brock came back in 2012, although I felt that way too. But even in 2002, when he came in as a rookie, that first night when he interfered in that hardcore match, and he did the triple powerbomb to Spike Dudley, and just this guy, the way he was like an animal. And it was obvious. Then you saw Paul Heyman out there with him, raising his arm, and you knew they had big plans for the guy. You knew this guy was going to be a force to be reckoned with. And then even when he came back again 10 years later in 2012, it was the same thing, right? Brock came in, having come off that stint in UFC, and it just felt like everything changed from the first day he came in. It's like, this guy is a legitimate ass kicker. He is, I say like as non-PG, I don't mean that like he goes around cussing and doing all this stuff, but like in this current era of WWE where everything is so scripted and nothing feels overly genuine and real, it doesn't feel like these guys like hate each other and have this real kind of hatred for one another when they go out there and they wrestle. And here comes this guy, bigger than most of the other guys on the roster, with an impressive resume, having actually done legitimate fighting, doesn't take shit from anybody. You just felt like the game changed when Brock came back. So it's kind of funny, even when he debuted in 02, it felt that way, and in 2012, 10 years later, it felt the same way all over again. So I would say Brock Lesnar is the one guy who really pops into my head that I feel that way about. This comes from Reese. With reports of Triple H and Stephanie McMahon wanting to change the way women are portrayed in WWE, I was wondering what your thoughts are on the concept of intergender wrestling, and if it has a place in mainstream wrestling in places like WWE, Lucha Underground, TNA, and Ring of Honor. WWE used to do it in the past with the likes of Chyna and Jacqueline, and intergender tag team matches would take place as well. Men as a whole are genetically built to be bigger and stronger than women. That much is true. So maybe the idea of a massive man beating up a petite woman is morally wrong. Yeah, I would say so. But in my opinion, no matter what the size of a person, gender should not be an issue. Look at the likes of Candice LeRae, Sarah Del Rey back on the independent scene, cheerleader Melissa, and the women of Lucha Underground. Women who can go toe-to-toe with men and come out as equals, if not stronger. Sure, if it was done on a daily basis, it would not be as special. But given the right story, I can see the likes of Seth Rollins and Charlotte having a good match against each other someday. I'm currently training to be a wrestler myself, and while they normally pair the men and the men off together and the women with the women, they do occasionally pair up opposite sexes, and we have no problem working together, so I don't see why they can't replicate this on television. Do you think there is a place for intergender wrestling in the mainstream? I personally am not a fan of it. You're asking me for my own opinion. I don't like it. I don't like it. I can't really get into it. Although I have to say, the idea of a Seth Rollins-Charlotte match is actually kind of intriguing to me. I think Charlotte may have bigger balls than Seth Rollins does. But I just, it's not my cup of tea. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. It's not something I'm a fan of. It's one thing if you've got a man and a woman, the woman's slapping the guy, and the guy is, they've done angles before. The guy's like, grabs the woman's arm and is kind of holding her back. I mean, it's good heat, I guess, but we've seen in Lucha Underground, we saw it on the most recent show. I didn't mention it earlier in the review, but early in that Trios ladder match, I don't know if it was Bayle. I think it might have been Bayle. Walked up to Eva Lise, who was just standing outside of the ring with her bum ankle, and just punched her in the face. Like it was nothing. Because in Lucha Underground, everybody is treated equally. I mean, they try hard to just, it's not a big deal that this guy just walked up to this woman on crutches and smacked her in the face. To me, it's hard for me to say. I know it's entertainment. You know, it's not like I'm getting my panties in a bunch here of, you know, every little thing offends me. It's just one of those things that when I see it, it bothers me. It makes me uncomfortable. And that's not the point. If they're doing an angle where, let's just go back to Raw Monday Night, okay? And let's say this was a different time and era in WWE. This was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, whatever. And Lana slapped Rusev in the face. Instead of standing there with the crazy eyes and then Dolph cuts him off before he can do anything, let's say Rusev gets her in the corner and grabs her, and or not even grabs her. Let's say Rusev hauls off and with one of his savate kicks and kicks her right in the face. Knocks her out. Right? That's something that we probably would have seen 10, 15 years ago if it were a different time and place. But we don't see it now. Because, you know, for obvious reasons, the product is what it is, and it would upset a lot of people and cost them some sponsors, and it would cause a whole firestorm that they just don't need. But I do think in certain situations, let's say he didn't kick her in the face maybe, but Rusev grabbed Lana by the arm and violently threw her down to the mat. I'd be okay with that if it was to put heat on Rusev and then somebody came to save the day and people to really want to see this guy beat the shit out of Rusev. Like, that's fine. I wouldn't want to see him kick her in the face. You want to know something else? Now that I think about it, I think back to 10 years ago, 12 years ago in WWE, when this sort of thing would have been acceptable. And it actually bothered me then, too. I think back to that angle with the... that was when Eric Bischoff was doing his hot lesbian action stuff. And he had the two women in the ring who were doing a little bit of HLA. And out comes 3-Minute Warning, right? Rosie and Jamal. And they beat the shit out of those women. In fact, I think it was Jamal Umaga who hauled off and kicked the one woman in the chest. I think he actually broke her ribs when he kicked her. So he kicked the shit out of her. And then I think they gave her maybe a Samoan drop. And then he very strategically positioned her face by the other woman's crotch, laid them on top of one another for a little lesbian sandwich, and then went up to the top rope and came off with the big splash. I remember even then thinking, man, this is too much. Like, this, you know, I don't know. It just, even then, it didn't sit well with me. So I'm just speaking for myself here. That sort of thing, if you go too far with it, it just doesn't work. Because I don't think that's something that people want to see. If you want to see that, there's probably something wrong with you. If you want to see, and I'm not talking like intergender wrestling. I'm saying something like that angle they did. Probably something wrong with you. You might want to look into that. But I don't have any problem, let's say, if they want to get heat on somebody by having a guy grab a woman to throw her down or something like that. I could see that. Intergender wrestling, it's a whole different thing. I mean, now you're talking about, you know, punching him in the face, kicking him in the face. Like you said, men by their very nature in wrestling. We're not just talking men and women here. We're talking male wrestlers. These guys work out. They're in good shape. They've got big bulging muscles. So even more than the regular average guy or a scrawny guy, I can't buy into it. I just can't buy into the idea that fucking Pentagon Jr. is selling for all these fucking moves that Sexy Star is doing to him, and then she's pinning him. I just can't get into it. I can't believe it. My suspension of disbelief can only be stretched so far. So I don't think there is a place for it in mainstream wrestling, speaking personally, because I don't like it. But the real reason there's no place for it in mainstream wrestling is because the mainstream will never accept it. This world, for better or worse, is only getting more politically correct, and I think it's ridiculous how PC things are now. I think it is probably has gone too far. But the mainstream will never accept it. The mainstream will never accept the idea of a man walking in the ring and just punching a woman in the face or picking her up above his head and violently slamming her down. The world we live in, the way television is now, the slightest thing can get you kicked off TV. I don't see that changing. If anything, I think it's only going to get worse. It's not going to go away. So with the evolution of TV being what it is, you're asking me, do I think the day will come that we might be able to see that in the mainstream? The answer is no. Even if I loved intergender wrestling, my answer would be no. There is not a prayer, there's not a chance in hell that you will ever see that accepted. Even if a promotion wanted to do it, they've got to consider the network they're on. They don't want to get kicked off. And then there's sponsors and advertisers. There's no way. So I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening, and I don't think it should. Dallas from Kentucky. I noticed while watching NXT TakeOver that there's something in pro wrestling that bothers me, and I want to know if I'm crazy or not. When the bell rang, Kevin Owens got out of the ring at the beginning of his match with Sami Zayn to stall. And my question is, do you think this takes away from the match? Does it bother you? I think it takes away from the match in that I am all pumped to see them go at it, and then one wrestler, usually the heel, just walks out. It's called being a heel, dude. I cannot disagree with you more. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was one of the best things he did all night. It's a lot of the little things that Owens does, whether it's wearing the John Cena shirt or taking a dive when the bell rings and the match starts. That's old school heel stuff right there. Larry Zbysko made a career out of it, but he was hardly the only one. As soon as Owens dove out of the ring, I laughed. That was my first reaction. I wasn't like, oh man. I was like, that's fucking funny. It actually makes sense, too. Sami Zayn wants to tear this guy apart. And Kevin Owens knows that. Sami Zayn's the one coming back for revenge, not Kevin Owens. Sami wants to kill him. He's full of piss and vinegar. Owens knows that. So what does he do? He stalls. He dives out of the ring to kill Sami's momentum. Playing head games with him. I thought it was brilliant. Didn't ruin the match for me at all. Now, if he kept doing that over and over and over and over again, it would probably get very annoying. He did it once. Didn't bother me at all. It's part of being a heel. I wish more people would do it. Mark writes in, for the smart fans who watch wrestling, do they have honest, genuine reactions anymore to what they see on TV? Do you? Not suspend your disbelief emotions or appreciate it for what it is emotions, but honest pathos or joy. I thought about this because I got genuinely depressed seeing Becky Lynch lose to Sasha Banks at NXT Unstoppable, as in my heart sank and I truly felt bad for her, which hasn't happened to me watching a wrestling show since ever, probably. I knew nothing about either woman outside the promo package they aired right before the event. In fact, I know pretty much nothing about NXT beyond who gets to Raw and who you mention on your podcast. The match was amazing, but I felt like if I had followed these women and watched NXT like I do Raw, maybe it would not have seemed special, or it would have felt like just another match, in the way that you watch something often enough, you get desensitized. You know what? That's a great question. You ask me, do I feel genuine emotion at all, or is it all just, well, that looked good, that looked bad, she didn't sell it. Like, you know, it's very easy to get wrapped up in that sort of thing. Like, I am just fascinated as all hell by, like, the inner workings of the wrestling business and what goes into a match and listening to interviews when wrestlers talk about that kind of thing. Like, I don't claim to know all of that stuff. I am not a wrestler. I mean, there are people listening to this podcast right now who are wrestlers. I know that for a fact. Some of whom are people that you would probably recognize. And there are other people listening to the show right now who wrestle on an independent level, who are just starting out. Right? We had a question earlier in the show from somebody who said that he was just training to be a wrestler. So those people would know better than... I mean, they could answer that question you know, maybe better than I can in terms of... I would be fascinated to know if you're somebody who's in the business and who does this for a living, if you're on the same show... And then let's say your match is over and you go backstage and now you're watching through the curtain or you're watching on a monitor and the main event is on and it's an awesome match and it's got a great story and great emotion. Can you, as a performer, get wrapped up in things? I mean, this is what you do. You were in that same ring. You know what goes into this. You know the inner workings of everything. I would be intrigued to hear from actual wrestlers and people like that if they can get invested in matches like that, if they can completely separate themselves, even just for a few minutes, and get wrapped up in the story, like, oh man, what a prick, I can't believe he did that, or, you know, this woman won the championship, and she's in tears in the ring, and now you're in tears watching it, because she deserves it so much, she's so good, you know, that's a question I would love to put to actual performers who are in there. But if you're asking me as a fan, you know, as long as I've been watching this stuff for, can I still... almost like kayfabe live on, I guess is what you're kind of asking. The answer is yes, absolutely. I mean, I'll take you back to the, I guess it would have been Battleground, the first Battleground show a couple of years ago, and they did the match, the tag team title match. No, I'm sorry, it wasn't for the titles. It was for their jobs. It was the Rhodes Brothers against Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns of The Shield. And Dusty was out there in Goldust Corner and Cody's Corner. First of all, the match itself was great. I don't remember what city it was in, but the fans were just awesome that night. And the finish of that match, probably the best crossroads I've ever seen Cody Rhodes do. Seth Rollins sold that like a champ. And they got the win, and the place exploded. They played Dusty's music. Dusty got in the ring. All three of them embraced. They were in tears. Their jobs have been saved. And then they walk up the ramp, and all the mid-card guys come out to kind of congratulate them on stage. It was so great. And I remember when that match ended and Cody got the pin, I had this kind of feeling of euphoria that came over me. Like, I knew this was an awesome match, but it was like, yeah, they got their jobs back. And then I kind of caught myself, you know, because I got wrapped up in the story. Like, I wanted them to win. Their father's out there. It was like an emotional thing, right? So I had that kind of reaction to that match. I'm thinking of, I'll tell you something else that comes to mind. This goes back a few more years. Go back to like 2011, I guess maybe it would have been. Early 2012. This is when they had Daniel Bryan together with AJ Lee. Bryan may have already been the World Heavyweight Champion, or actually, you know what? This may have been after he lost the title to Sheamus. It's very possible that this was immediately after that. He was still a heel, and he didn't want to have anything to do with AJ. AJ had been his valet for a while, and he just mistreated her and treated her like shit. In a lot of ways, kind of like that Savage Elizabeth dynamic from back in the day. And there was one promo on SmackDown. AJ just wanted to talk to him. She wanted to mend fences and work things out. I love you. I care for you. And Bryan, he was such a prick to this woman. And he made a comment to AJ. He told her that she was worthless and he wished she had never been born. Now, that was pretty wicked to say, but AJ was also so good just at being AJ at that time and just so cute and just making you feel bad for her. When he said that line, like, I had this feeling of genuine anger towards the Daniel Bryan character. Like, what a fucking asshole. Like, what a shitty thing to say to somebody. And then AJ's, like, practically in tears. So I remember feeling anger, like legit anger towards Bryan, because he was, yeah, the whole segment, I guess, was just that good. I remember that. So those are just a couple of examples. I'm sure I could come up with others. You know, like when Bryan won the title of WrestleMania last year, like I wasn't crying, I was happy for the guy. But I think that really was more, I don't know if I was wrapped up in like kayfabe, like, oh, he beat the Authority. Like, it was nothing like that. It was more, I've been watching this guy since he was on the indies. I've seen him in person since he was on the indies. So I know what this guy's been through and where he's been. And then knowing about all the backstage bullshit that was going on, I felt genuinely happy for him in that way. But that's different. I don't think that's really what you're talking about here. But yeah, the answer to your question is absolutely. And if I can do it, if I can feel that way, then you can too. Every single person listening to this podcast, no matter how smart they may think they are, kayfabe is dead. You know, you guys, if you're a real wrestling fan and there's something good enough on TV that you really get into, I guarantee you can feel the same way. It happens. Every now and then there's a great match or a great promo or whatever, and they're just really good at what they do, and you get all wrapped up in it. And for a moment there, you kind of lose sight of what it is, and you almost go back to when you were a kid, I think, in some ways. That's kind of what makes wrestling so great. Boy, that was a really deep answer I just gave. Aaron from Buffalo, New York. Since Samoa Joe now has officially made his debut in NXT, and since Brock Lesnar has re-signed with WWE, do you think Joe versus Brock will happen at some point? This has always been a dream match of mine, and now there is a possibility of it potentially happening. Well, there is a possibility, but I'm sorry to say, Aaron, I do not think that match will happen. Brock and Owens, I could see down the road. That would be another fun match. But I don't know. I just don't think we're ever going to see Brock and Joe, so I wouldn't get my hopes up. Ace from Michigan. Would you consider The Rock a career transitional champion? All of his reigns were relatively short and seemed to be with the intention of getting the belt to somebody else. There was the hot potato with Mick Foley in early 99. When he finally came out of that, he held it for Stone Cold. He held it for 21 days in April of 2000, then won it back in June and held it for 4 months, and even then, it seemed like he held it for Kurt Angle. Then he won it back in early 2001 to move it to Stone Cold, won it in July of 02 to get it to Brock at SummerSlam, and then his reign in 2013 to get the belt to John Cena. What do you think? Well, you make a good point. The Rock, most of his title runs were, you can consider them, transitional title runs. Absolutely. I wouldn't say that he was just holding it for Kurt Angle in 2000. I think it wasn't decided until much later on they were going to put the belt on Angle. I don't think it was like in June when he won the belt back. All right, 4 months from now or 5 months from now, we're going to put the championship on Kurt Angle. I don't think it was anything like that. So that run, I think, in mid-2000 may have been the closest thing to just a legitimate just rock title reign that he's ever had. But yeah, every other one that you mentioned, you're absolutely right. We're talking in terms of the world title, not like the Intercontinental title or anything like that. Yeah, most of the time, it was to get the title back to Stone Cold. That was kind of the idea. Or maybe even Triple H. But the ones that you mentioned, like the last two, the one in 2002, absolutely. They got the belt on him so he could drop it to Brock. And the most recent one, I mean, that was a plan that they hatched more than a year in advance, that they were going to have this series of matches, and Rock would win the first one, because the understanding was that the second one, Cena would win, and in between, Rock would get the belt, so when Rock lost, he would also drop the championship back to Cena. So that, I mean, that right there is the very definition of a transitional champion. So I think in a lot of ways you're right, but I would probably disagree on the Angle thing. I don't think that was something they knew about that far in advance. And hey, if the stories are to be believed, it's one of my favorite stories. As they were deciding whether or not to put the belt on Kurt Angle in the fall of 2000, they had, you know, their production meeting, booking meeting, whatever, and Triple H would sit in even then on those meetings. And they were talking about putting the belt on Angle, and Triple H was vocal about that not happening. Now, he had just gotten through a program with Kurt, that love triangle with Angle and Triple H and Stephanie, that was actually really entertaining. And then it just kind of ended. They had one match, and it ended. And Triple H won, and that was it. Which was kind of shitty. But Triple H won. And so I don't know if he was coming at it from the viewpoint of not just that Kurt's too small, which is supposedly what he said. And then Gerald Briscoe piped up and said something about how, well, why don't we see the two of you in a real fight and see who comes out? And then Triple H shut his mouth after that. So good on Jerry Briscoe for saying something. And they did put the belt on Kurt, by the way. I don't know if it was just a matter of always too small, or maybe Triple H felt, well, I just beat him in this feud. It makes no sense to put the belt on Kurt. Whatever his mindset was, I'm sure he was looking out for his own interests. But that didn't come until many months later. So I would just disagree with you on that one point. And lastly here, Khalid from Saudi Arabia. If Hulk Hogan had a career-ending injury in the mid-80s, who do you think would have taken over as WWE's top superstar and been the guy to carry the company? That's a loaded question right there. It's impossible to know for sure, because I don't know if Vince would have gone after somebody maybe that was working for Crockett, if he would have made a play for a guy like Flair. I mean, I don't know. You say mid-80s, so it depends also what year you're talking about. If we're talking about 85, that was the year that Randy Savage debuted in WWE. When he debuted as a heel. He didn't turn babyface until late 87. Would they have put the title on Savage? I guess they could have turned him, or could have just brought him in as a babyface and just put the championship on him. But I still think he would have been a heel. He probably would have been better as a heel, and you can't have a heel as the guy, right? Like, Piper was the top heel, but he was chasing Hogan. So if Savage was a heel, who would have been the babyface? Would it have been Piper? Could they have turned Piper? Maybe. I mean, maybe they could have. He ended up turning anyway, like a year later, after the first WrestleMania. Year and a half, whatever it was. I still think Savage would have been the best bet there. You know, Savage came in the mid-80s. They could have turned him. He was a good enough talent in the ring, and with Elizabeth with him. You know, keep in mind, when Savage won the championship in 88, Hogan was away filming a movie. Savage had a very successful run as the WWF champion that year. I mean, in terms of business, I mean, they were doing very well with Savage on top. But the plan all along had been to transition the title onto Hogan. You know, Savage turns heel, Hogan gets the belt back, that was the agreement. Savage could have probably kept on going, though, as the babyface world champion. I mean, he was, you know, doing well at the house shows, and he was obviously a great performer in the ring. He can have good matches with almost anybody. So I think Savage was probably the most likely guy who would have taken the spot. Would he have ended up as big as Hogan? I mean, Savage was obviously a very charismatic guy, but, you know, charismatic in a different way than Hogan was. Would he have gotten the same mainstream appeal Maybe not. But I think Savage probably would have been the guy. I think of a guy like a Ricky Steamboat. You know, they put the Intercontinental title on Steamboat in 87. Took it off him pretty quick because he wanted time off for his family. I know his wife was having a kid. And I guess Vince, you know, resented him for it. So they took him out of the picture there. But if that never happened, do they eventually graduate Steamboat from Intercontinental level to WWE title? Well, I don't know. If Hogan's not around, I mean, nobody's going to deny that Ricky Steamboat would have been an awesome babyface. I don't think Ricky Steamboat would have had the mainstream appeal that Hogan had, but I think he probably would have done well in that role. But I'm going to go with Savage. Savage, to me, is the most obvious pick. I think he would have, not only would he have been the guy, but I think he would have done very well, because the evidence was there even a few years later in 88 that even with Hogan gone, Savage did just fine. We're going to end this week with the sad tweet segment. If the sad tweet segment could ever have a boom period of its own, then this week was the frickin' attitude era of sad tweets. Holy shit, so much stupidity to choose from, it's hard to narrow it down, but ultimately, you knew this week's winners had to be TNA related in some way. We have two winners this week, the first one being one of TNA's own performers, Sean Ricker, the former Slate Randall in NXT, who never did make his TV debut. He got cut. The current Eli Drake is his name in TNA. He's part of the Rising faction with Drew Galloway. His handle is at Eli Drake TNA. He tweeted this following the NXT TakeOver special on Wednesday night. He said, "Then this happened, ... with a picture of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man from Ghostbusters wearing the NXT title and Fight Puff Fight scrawled across his chest." You know, to me, now it all makes sense why WWE cut this guy. You know, the rumor at the time was he got himself into some, like, Twitter trouble. They didn't like his activity on social media and some of the things he was either saying or retweeting from other fans, and so that got him into a lot of hot water, and he got cut. I mean, he's got a great look. I said that from the beginning. I defended the guy. When WWE cut him, I said that was a big mistake because this guy's got star potential written all over him. And, oh, you know, they're going to cut him for some stupid Twitter bullshit. But you know what? In looking at that tweet and a lot of the other dumbass tweets that he posted on his account this week after this one, I can see exactly why WWE got rid of him. And I feel like a fool for defending him after they cut him. Now, on the one hand, you have a man in Kevin Owens who is feuding with no less than four different people right now. He is the NXT champion, champion of a hot brand, and he has a match with John Cena 1 week from today. On the other hand, you have Eli Drake. I rest my case. The other winner, or is it loser? I'm not quite sure how to describe these people. This week goes to the voice of Impact Wrestling, Josh Matthews. Josh was at it again this week, as if publicly insulting Jim Ross and anybody over the age of 60 wasn't enough. He was back at it again. After TakeOver, boy, all these TNA people seem to lose their minds after a really hot WWE show. Like, they're watching all of the WWE shows, and then they just lose their fucking mind. You ever notice that? Josh Matthews sent this tweet out. He said, "How did the NXT announcers know who Samoa Joe was if we are hashtag obscurity in their world? Sick of hypocrisy." You know what hypocrisy I'm sick of? I'm sick of companies and promoters who go on social media and complain about people spreading vicious lies and mistruths and just not being honest with people about what's going on, while at the same time lying to its own performers, hiding the truth from the people who actually work for them. That, to me, is a form of hypocrisy that I just can't stand. But let me help Josh out a little bit here. So he mentioned, how would they know who Samoa Joe was if TNA doesn't exist in their world? Well, for one thing, Joe actually has wrestled on WWE television before. He wrestled 14 years ago. I recall a match that he had on Metal or Jacked or one of those shows once against S.A. Rios. I'm pretty sure he had more matches. I don't think that was the only match that Joe had on one of those secondary shows. But Samoa Joe has actually wrestled on WWE television before. So if we're talking about continuity in that world, He already exists. They should know who he is. He's wrestled on, he's never had a contract with them before, but he has in fact wrestled on television before for WWE. That's number one. Number two, he had a pretty good run for himself in Ring of Honor. Made a name for himself in Ring of Honor. That's why when he showed up in TNA, it was such a big deal. He didn't show up in TNA as an unknown. He didn't show up in TNA to crickets. People remembered him as the dominant champion 21 months long as the Ring of Honor champion. And WWE actually has acknowledged Ring of Honor before. They don't do it very often, but it has been done before. They won't say a word about TNA, unless it's on a Steve Austin podcast. But they actually have acknowledged Ring of Honor before, especially on WWE.com. In fact, I think they did a whole article last year on Ring of Honor, and they even interviewed Gabe Sapolsky for it. And they talked about guys like Samoa Joe and CM Punk and Austin Aries and Seth Rollins and Cesaro. There was a whole article about Ring of Honor on WWE.com. I was shocked when I saw it. So it stands to reason that the announcers in WWE, they read the stuff they put out on the website. And also, by the way, his fucking name was on his shirt when he walked out. It said Samoa Joe on his shirt. I've now given you three different explanations as to how these announcers would have known who the hell Samoa Joe even was. But Josh has just lost his mind. People were writing to him, letting him know this. It got to the point, he may have deleted the tweet, but somebody sent it to me where he lost his mind. He sent a tweet out, all caps, 5 exclamation points. Poor guy. He's clearly under a lot of stress. Probably doesn't know if he's going to have a job in 6 months. After all, he is the television announcer. As of right now, you're looking at a company that 6 months from now probably won't even have television. So I understand if Josh is under a great deal of stress and under a great deal of pressure. I get that. My advice to Josh Matthews, stay off Twitter. Until you calm down a little bit, take a pill maybe, stay off Twitter. You're not doing yourself any favors. You can tweet me your suggestions, as many of you did this week, for said tweet. Let me know, at Solomonster, anytime somebody says something sad, stupid, or dumb on Twitter that you think might be a candidate for said tweet, you can let me know, and I might actually use your suggestion. You can email me as well. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the email address. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. And you can also friend me on Facebook. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster is my profile page. We have a fan page that you can like. Just type in the full name of the podcast in the search bar. Also, if you type in the full name of the podcast, we have a private discussion group loaded with well over 3,000 members. You need to be approved. You can't just go in. It is a closed group. So you must apply for membership. Be patient. And if you feel like you've been in queue forever and you should be approved and you haven't been, send me a Facebook message, send me a tweet, send me an email, and let me know. It's part of the process, the vetting process. I'm trying to weed out and keep out the riffraff. So if I know you are a legitimate fan of the Sound Off and you feel like you're stuck in queue and you shouldn't be in there, just let me know and I'll get you in there. So we're all over the place. Check us out. Don't forget, full payback review is up on the YouTube channel, as well as my half-hour-plus interview with JTG, former WWE superstar, who has a new book out. You can find all of that bonus content on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolomonster. Hit the subscribe button. That way, when a new video goes up, you will be alerted. And you can go and listen. And always, remember this, the MP3 link is always in the video description. So if you don't like the fact, oh, it's on YouTube, I need to listen to this on my iPod, you can download the MP3. You got to go into the video, and in the video description, there is always a link. I got you guys covered. Don't worry. So that's it for this week's show. We will be back next weekend with a brand new podcast. That will be number 385. So until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you, as always, for downloading this podcast and making the show as big as it has become. Please keep spreading the word. I am the Solomonster. Enjoy your Memorial Day holiday if you're here in the States, and we'll see you right back here again next week. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
If WWE were a person, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as passionate, talented, funny, modest, except for all those did-you-know facts they pepper us with every single week. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, adventurous, flexible. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? This is a real survey question here. You would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type.
Since 2007, The Salamonster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.